Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 1. Harry raced through the atrium, dodging witches and wizards, trying to make it back to the office before he was even later. Ginny had asked him to look for her flying gloves, and during his lunch hour he had torn his flat apart. Creature wasn't pleased, and shooed him through the flue with grumbling insults. It was only once he landed in the atrium that he stole a glance at his pocket watch and realized his lunch hour had taken almost 2. He made it into the elevator seconds before the doors closed and crowded in with the many occupants. Harry stumbled out when the doors opened at level 2 and rushed toward the office, sliding into his desk unnoticed. He let out a deep sigh.
Potter!
Robard's voice could carry. He'd give the man that. Harry pushed himself back onto his feet. His heart had only a moment to slow before he was back in motion again. At the head auror's door, Robards waved him in.
"There's a file on level 9 we've been waiting for the Perkins case. That lot seems not to believe in memos, so I'll need you to go get it from Harrison,"
Robards grumbled, while searching through the mountain of parchment on his desk.
Yes, sir. Sir, I haven't been to the Department of Mystery since the... since the war," Harry said.
"Keep a clear mind of who you're looking for, and the right doors will open," Robards instructed, his voice easing.
"Thank you, sir," Harry said.
He spun and left the office, clapping Ron on the shoulder on his way back to the lift. The blue-white light from the torches flickering on the black-tiled walls was just as foreboding as when he was 15. Cool and damp, the Department of Mysteries always made him feel as though he were back to being his 15-year-old self. The black door at the end of the corridor swung open at his approach. When he was in the entrance chamber, it tempted him to ask for the Veil's room, but pushed that out of his mind.
"Harrison," Harry stated, his voice echoing in the room.
The doors began their dizzy spin and stopped just as quick. The door ahead of him swung open with force. His footsteps seemed to echo more than they should as he continued forward. The time room differed from the last time he'd seen it. Still long and rectangular, the gem-colored light still sparkled throughout the room. The room held, if possible, even more clocks. The display of time-turners was no longer there, replaced with daises that displayed an assortment of objects. Some were weapons, hourglasses. An ancient-looking sundial shared a dais with a long, ancient tool. A sickle, or a scythe, perhaps. He could never remember the difference. He ran a finger along first the sundial, then the tool, amazed at the condition of such ancient artifacts. Harry hissed when his finger caught on the end, and he chuckled to himself as he stuck the finger in his mouth to stop the tiny nick from bleeding. Old didn't mean dull. At the end of the room, to the right of the bell jar, a door stood ajar. Harry moved toward it, knocking, and pushed it open when he heard a grunt from within.
"Harrison?" Harry asked.
The wizard, hunched over an overfilled desk, looked up and granted Harry a smile.
"Harry Potter! You're well?"
Ellis Harrison, the department liaison to the DMLE, asked, and extended his hand. Harry shook it and nodded.
"And you?"
"Excellent. What can I do for you?"
"Robards wants the Perkins file," Harry said, his gaze roaming the tiny office.
Harrison laughed, deep and low. It reminded Harry a bit of Kingsley.
"And Gawain couldn't be asked to come down himself?" Harrison asked, as he pulled a file jacket from the center of a teetering pile.
He extended the file to Harry, who took it with a nod.
"Is there anything else I can help you with?"
"I'm not sure, actually." Harry hesitated. "I know there's a lot you can't disclose, but I've wondered."
Harrison sat back and gave Harry his full attention.
"My godfather. He died down here a few years back," Harry said.
"Sirius Black, the Veil in the death chamber."
"Yes, I had heard you were there," Harrison said.
"I can't tell you all that I know, but perhaps I might tell you enough. What do you think about lunch at the Leaky Cauldron? Say, noon, Saturday?"
That'd be perfect. Thank you so much, sir, Harry said, his excitement growing.
None of that sir nonsense. Ellis will do, Harrison said, standing up and reaching out to shake Harry's hand again.
Harry, then.
Harry shook his hand and left, a parting thanks thrown over his shoulder. He wound his way back out to the entrance chamber, which provided the exit at his request. His journey to level 2 seemed lighter than the journey down had. He jogged up the steps to his flat in a large Muggle building on the edge of Whitechapel. It was small, but had a second bedroom for Teddy to visit. His neighbors thought him odd, but that was a feeling he had long been used to. His traveling cloak and shoes came off at the door, both piled together on the floor. Dimitri was using his perch, head buried under his wing. Harry opened the window for him so he could go out and hunt, and entered the kitchen to hunt for himself. The refrigerator was fit to burst, a signal that Molly had dropped by while he was at work. A large pan toward the top had a note stuck to it telling him to eat tonight. Lasagna wasn't a favorite of his, but Molly's made him a believer. Ron's mum was an angel. She not only helped him find this place, but she popped by to be sure he was getting on all right. Full and tired, Harry dragged himself to bed, putting his shower off until the morning. The ministry had worked him hard today, and he wasn't above setting with the sun. Out of Place, written by Fay Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 2. Harry was in that pleasant state between sleeping and being awake. He was cozy, content, and felt more rested than he had in a while. The mattress shifted, and he wondered why he hadn't woken up when Ginny came in. More than that, he wondered why she was here. He opened his eyes and blinked a few times before rolling onto his back.
"You said you wouldn't do this anymore," he mumbled.
This wasn't his bedroom. It was too bright, the ceiling a cheerful white rather than the wood tiling of his flat. A chill had replaced the lazy warmth that had permeated his body. He slid his hand up and under his pillow, and felt a moment of relief when he encountered his wand. Harry hadn't left home last night, which narrowed what happened. His heart thudded in his ears as he slid from the bed, his wand aimed at the blurred lump under the duvet. He slid his hand over the bedside table and felt for his glasses for another momentary relief. Harry's foot caught on his trousers, crumpled on the floor. One-handed, he worked them onto his legs and up, taking more time than he'd like, and he spared a moment to button them. Kidnapped, definitely. Poison or a curse? Yes, to either. Harry didn't even want to imagine the moments that led to him naked in that bed. Secure the suspect. In caw, his wand jumped from his hand halfway through his spell. He nabbed it out of the air before it left his reach and swung it back to the suspect. What are you doing? The instinct to drop his wand was one the Academy had trained him out of, but it almost got the best of him. Someone using Polyjuice Potion to look like Severus Snape was sitting up in bed, their wand aimed at him, naked from the waist up. At least, that's what it looked like. Harry could have said that out of all the things he'd least expected, it wouldn't have made his list.
Who are you? Harry asked.
What is wrong with you? Did something happen? A nightmare? Snape asked. If you're going to pretend to be a dead man, you should have studied up on this one a bit more. Lower your wand, now, Harry instructed. Something's wrong with you, the stranger said, and slid backward from the bed. His wand never strayed from its target. Can you trust me long enough to get someone you do trust?
Lower your wand, Harry repeated.
Send a Patronus, or allow me to. Minerva, Hermione, Arthur Weasley, anyone you trust, the Snape lookalike said.
His wand did not lower.
Lower your wand and you can use the flu to call someone, Harry said.
The impostor hesitated for a moment before he placed his wand on the bed and pulled on his own trousers. His eyes never seemed to leave Harry's wand. He draped a button down over his shoulders and put his arms through it, though didn't go through the process to button it. His gaze met Harry's, and he just stared for a moment before nodding and turning his back on the wand aimed at him. Snape would never. Harry followed them from the bedroom and through a small hall that spilled into a cozy living area. He watched as he grabbed a handful of flue powder from a round clay pot and kneeled in front of the flue. Hermione, Harry said. Snape nodded and threw the powder into the flames.
11 Springcroft Avenue, London, he said.
The flames turned a brilliant green. That wasn't Hermione's address.
Can you come through? Snape asked.
Harry could hear Hermione's answer, and a moment later Snape made way, and she stepped through. She glanced between them, then took a long look at Harry's aimed wand.
What's going on, Harry?
Hermione asked. She sounded as if she were choosing her words with care, and given the circumstances, Harry could understand.
The first time I met your mum, what did she say to me?
Harry asked her.
Thank you for taking care of my daughter, which I found dismissive because of all the times I took care of you, Hermione answered. We met on the train. I was helping Neville look for Trevor. We cried in the graveyard on Christmas. You broke my favorite quill the day before OWLs. You helped slip me that potion into Lavender's tea. Anything else? Hermione said.
She had taken a few steps while she spoke.
No, he said.
Will you please stop pointing your wand at Severus and tell me what's going on?
Hermione asked, taking another step forward to put herself between his wand and the target.
Severus Snape is dead, Harry said. You know this as well as I. We were there.
No, Harry, Hermione said, and held her hands out in front of her. We saved him. Drops of Dittany, general healing potions, Ron buggering up a healing spell and somehow strengthening it. And a lot of luck.
No, he died on the floor of the shack. We snuck out through the tunnel, Harry countered. By the time Madame Pomfrey got to him, there was nothing to be done.
He lowered his wand, as Hermione seemed nervous.
Have you been having nightmares lately? Hermione asked.
She wrapped her hand around his and coaxed the wand from his hand. Harry let her and watched as she set it on a table nearby.
I haven't had nightmares in a year, Harry said. You know that.
No, I know you were having them most of last month, to the point of exhaustion, Hermione said.
He racked his brain.
No, he hadn't. The last time was the night before the Ministry's Remembrance Ball last year.
Snape watched the interaction, and he didn't move except to button his shirt.
Where is this place? Harry asked.
Your home, in Hogsmeade. Hermione said.
I live in a flat in London, Harry snapped.
No, you live in a cottage in Hogsmeade and have for 2 years. We should go to St. Mungo's, Hermione snapped.
I'm not bloody mad. This is wrong. Something's wrong, don't you see?
Harry couldn't stop his voice from rising.
I don't think you're mad, Harry Potter. I think you've been overworking yourself, taking the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you haven't tried to work through whatever's giving you these nightmares. I think you need rest, and yes, seeing a healer would do you well, so we can be sure nothing magical is going on.
Hermione matched his tone.
Angry, Harry turned to Snape. What did I see in your pensive? Harry snapped at him.
Snape changed from a placid, neutral man to an angry one.
What used to be my worst memories? Those that stemmed from and led to my greatest mistakes. Is that enough, or should I describe them in detail? Snape said, his voice low.
Harry!
Hermione called.
You were in love with my mother. In which world does it make sense that we end up in bed together?
Harry ranted.
You love Hermione? I do not suppose that should pose an issue, Snape spat.
Don't bring me into this, Hermione murmured.
This makes no bloody sense, Harry growled.
He snatched his wand from the table and turned toward where he assumed was the entry door. It was. It took a few minutes of trying to calm himself before he realized that he was barefoot and shirtless on the garden path of the cottage, in Hogsmeade, on what looked to be a busy shopping day. Number 12 Grimold Place was dark, dusty, and seemed to have been left to rot since the war. A far cry from the remodeled home he'd passed on to Andromeda and Teddy. There was no sign of creature, and Harry wondered if he was at Hogwarts. He trudged up the stairs to his former bedroom and was thankful to find some of his own musty clothes. He performed a litany of cleaning and freshening charms and finished getting dressed. Harry sat on the bed and collapsed back onto the duvet. He was mad, or there was something magically wrong. A dream, maybe. A very lucid dream. There were potions that claimed to do that. Hermione seemed to be Hermione. She acted like herself. She knew the answers. No one knew about the lavender thing but for the two of them. But if Hermione was Hermione, he would have to accept that Snape was Snape. That seemed more than a stretch. Once you added the being in bed together part, it became fiction. Snape wouldn't sleep with him. Snape wouldn't turn his back on a wand pointed at him. Snape wouldn't trust Hermione. Snape wouldn't trust him. Snape was dead. Was it him? Had he lost his marbles? If they were Death Eaters, or other types of criminals in disguise, they wouldn't have let him leave. He had to be mad. If he wasn't, why would he remember a different life? Snape died. Harry still felt the blood on his hands sometimes. He remembered the first anniversary of the battle. The Ministry was holding their annual ball at Hogwarts and revealed the memorial. They tried to make it a celebration. It disgusted those who'd fought and their families. It disgusted Harry. He'd wandered the castle's corridors for hours, then slipped out through the tunnel to the shack. There was a stain where Snape's blood had flowed. Harry had returned to the Great Hall to find Ginny and, to his surprise, Draco Malfoy giving the Ministry officials a piece of their minds. They made an intimidating and formidable team, surrounded by a crowd that egged them both on. The year after, they pulled the Remembrance Ball from the ashes of that confrontation, focused more on what mattered, the loss and the rebuild, honoring those lost and celebrating life. Harry had always respected Ginny, but for the first time he had respected and admired Draco Malfoy. Minerva McGonagall had woven her way through the crowd at the end of the evening to shake Draco's hand. They'd never be friends, he and Draco, but he would be a liar if he said he wasn't happy to see him when they ran into one another. When Lucius went missing, he was who Draco called. The door handle of the cottage turned the moment he touched it. He was still wondering if he should have knocked when he heard low voices. Harry followed the sound to the kitchen and dining area and listened to Snape and Hermione. After a moment, he backed away and entered the living room. It reminded him a bit of Hermione's first flat. Bookshelves spilled their contents everywhere. There were knick-knacks and framed photos scattered in the few empty spaces. Along the mantel, he spied dozens more photos crammed together. He stepped closer and spotted what seemed to be all of his friends. George, Ron, and himself at a pub. Ginny in a wedding dress clinging to Lee Jordan's arm. Luna reading a book to Teddy, with Andromeda smiling in the background. Draco and Ron playing chess. Snape. Snape and him. Everywhere. Here, Hogwarts, Diagon Alley, restaurants, and what looked to be a museum. Sometimes in the background of photos, sometimes the primary subjects. They looked happy. Snape smiled and laughed. He hadn't known Snape could laugh. He was quite handsome when he laughed. Harry shook his head and moved on. He followed the path back to the bedroom he'd woken up in and flopped onto the mattress, sparing only a moment to kick off his worn trainers. The ceiling and its cheerful white paint weren't terrible. He supposed madness wasn't that bad. At least he had someone who cared for him, even if it was the last person he'd expected. He should make an appointment with some sort of mind healer. Perhaps the Malfoys could refer him to someone that would keep quiet.
Harry?
Snape's voice was gentle. He hadn't known it could sound that way. He stared at the lines on the ceiling.
Yeah?
Harry asked. Snape sighed.
Would you like me to leave you be?
No, he said. Harry looked toward Snape, standing in the doorway. I didn't believe you were you earlier. Thought I was trying to goad you into getting angry. You became more recognizable when I made you angry. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
Forgiven. Do you remember? Snape asked.
They were both speaking so softly that it seemed a surreal experience. No, Harry said, and looked back at the ceiling. Not what I should, anyhow. I remember you dying, academy training, making squad leader, dating Ginny on and off, and a handful of others. I remember remodeling number 12, and Teddy asking me to repaint his bedroom there every few months. Andromeda's heart attack, and her healing. When he turned his head, Snape had crossed the room and was leaning on the bedpost. Did any of that really happen? Harry asked.
Andromeda's heart attack. Teddy requesting color changes to various items is also accurate, Snape said.
I'm glad you're alive, Harry said to him, but turned his attention to the ceiling halfway through. Very glad.
As am I, Snape responded. Are you hungry?
I'm mad, not infirm, Harry answered. Snape huffed and came within his vision.
Shove over, he demanded.
Amused more than shocked, Harry wriggled to the side, and Snape took a seat against the headboard, looking down at him.
You're not mad, just confused. You have struggled with your part in the war for a very long time, and I must admit my inability to speak about it has exacerbated the issue. Hermione's inexplicable knowledge of Muggle psychiatry suggests this is not uncommon in Muggle soldiers. Our brains are alike, so it stands to reason we react similarly.
Harry closed his eyes. The moment he did, he felt Snape's hand running through his hair. He fought the urge to pull away, and submitted to it as another point of madness. Comforting madness.
We will talk about it. I promise you, Snape said.
Harry fell asleep, wondering what they'd talk about. Out of Place. Written by Faye Lee. Read by Kaelin Reitz. Chapter 3. Within seconds of waking, Harry sat up, inspecting his surroundings. The sparsely decorated room with an enormous bed was nothing like where he'd fallen asleep. He grasped his glasses from the bedside table and shoved them on. There was a plastic card next to a Muggle telephone. His wand lay next to them, as if he tossed it there the previous night. He pulled the white duvet from his legs and swung them over the side of the bed, turning the card over in his hands. In a dark blue typeface, the card bore the name and address of a hotel in Calais. He slid from bed and pulled on the jeans that were crumpled on the floor. As he buckled his belt, he scanned the room for any belongings. Harry gathered what seemed to be his and shoved them into a black bag that was spilling over a nearby armchair. He traded the rumpled button-down he wore for a clean tee inside the bag, and slipped the nearby trainers on his feet. Hermione and Snape were wrong. It wasn't stress or whatever nonsense they were nattering on about the previous evening. This was magic, some curse he was unfamiliar with, and it seemed to get triggered while he slept. This morning, he woke up alone. He had that, at least. With a last glance around the room, he gripped his wand, focused on number 12, and spun on his heel. Harry stumbled upon landing on the steps, then hesitated as his hand gripped the door handle. Yesterday, Andromeda lived here. Would it be his home today? He raised his hand and rapped his knuckles on the wood a few times, teetering between feeling ridiculous and anxious. After about a minute had passed, he gave in and opened the door and dropped his bag off to the side. The entryway was cleaner, he noticed. Newer paint and furniture. Similar to how Andromeda kept her version of the home. "Hello?" he called. No one answered. Harry moved through the house slowly. Each step he took was careful and planned, though he heard no signs of life. As he placed a hand on the kitchen door, he heard the shake of a newspaper within. Sure that Andromeda would forgive him, he pushed the door open and froze at the sight. Nothing could have prepared him for his godfather. Not that he'd tried to prepare himself for the impossible. Sirius looked up and grinned, his dark hair neatly cropped.
Harry, you're not supposed to be home for another month.
Seconds later, Sirius was around the table and pulled him into a hug. After a stunned moment, Harry wound his arms around Sirius and squeezed.
Hungry? Sirius asked as he pulled back.
No, he said.
Harry's gaze drifted around the clean and modern kitchen and willed his heart to stop racing. When he looked back, Sirius was studying him, his concern clear.
What's wrong?
Sirius looked better than he'd ever seen him, no longer gaunt and haunted. He looked younger, even. Somehow, explaining what he knew seemed even more difficult than the day before.
Harry, what's wrong? Sirius repeated, this time with more force.
Promise you won't think I'm mad, Harry said, words tumbling out.
Never,
Sirius said, and grasped his shoulder to steer him into a chair. Harry watched as Sirius planted himself next to him.
I think I'm cursed, he started.
Cursed with what? By whom?
Do you promise? Harry whispered.
I do. You're making me nervous, Sirius said to him.
Harry nodded and clasped his hands together. He braced himself, took a breath, and nodded again. In order to figure out where to begin, he had to know when his life had changed. My parents died when I was a year old, he said, waiting for a reaction. After a moment, Sirius nodded. Dumbledore left me with the Dursleys. Sirius shook his head and frowned.
No.
That explained that. I'm not mad, Harry insisted.
I don't think you are. Why would Albus Dumbledore have a say in where you lived?
In my wo-
Harry scrunched his eyes closed and thought about the words before he tried again.
In my world, you chased after Pettigrew.
In your world? Sirius asked, his voice quiet.
Harry opened his eyes to meet Sirius's confused gaze.
In my world, my existence, dimension, my time. I don't know what it is, what it's called. I woke up yesterday in a life different from my own, and woke today in another one.
He pushed himself up from the chair and slid around Sirius, and leaned back against the worktop.
I'm not mad.
A curse, you said? Sirius asked.
I think so. What else could it be? Other than madness and stress,
Harry said, frustration coloring his words.
I need a drink.
Sirius conjured glasses and summoned a decanter with a few practiced waves of his wand. He poured amber liquid into the glasses and held one out for Harry, who shook his head.
It's 8 in the morning, Harry said, glancing at the wall clock.
Since when did that stop you?
Sirius seemed to realize what he said, and paused before he knocked back the drink he'd offered Harry.
I followed Peter, and what happened?
He faked his own death, framed you for it all, and you spent 12 years in Azkaban, Harry said.
Sirius frowned and toyed with the other glass. You escaped Britain with a hippogriff. Voldemort came back, then you died.
For me.
To save me, I mean.
You've never lied to me, Sirius said. This isn't a prank.
No, Harry said. No prank. And I'm not mad.
You seem different.
I imagine I am different.
So are you,
Harry gripped the worktop behind him. Sirius tapped his fingers on the table a few times, then leaned back in his chair.
Who killed me?
Bellatrix.
That bitch,
Sirius growled. The vehemence in his voice pulled a laugh from Harry. Sirius looked at him for a long moment, one corner of his mouth raised in a half smile.
We'll need help, Sirius sighed.
You believe me?
I believe you.
There must be someone else, Harry said for what seemed like the 100th time.
If you're right, and things change when you sleep, we have one day, maybe two, before you're back to convincing someone that you're not mad,
Sirius explained as he handed the pouch of potions to him.
Remember, one every 4 hours. Dumbledore is the most likely to know which direction is the most effective to look in.
Why not Remus or Hermione? Harry asked. He shoved the pouch into the pocket of his traveling cloak.
I haven't seen Remus in years, and I've got no idea who that other person is,
Sirius said to him as they ducked off to the side behind the leaky cauldron.
Plus, if this keeps happening, you don't know what reality you're headed to next. Dumbledore is a resource you should use while you can.
Harry sighed, then nodded. It'll take me 3 jumps.
Meet you there, Sirius said.
He clapped Harry on the shoulder, then disapparated. Sirius steadied him as he arrived in Hogsmeade, and they headed up the path to the castle. As they strode through the school's gates, a thought struck Harry. Who taught me potions? He saw Sirius's upper lip twitch in disgust, which was answer enough, as it was the only one he received. Professor Flitwick met them at the doors, shaking their hands and greeting them with enthusiasm. Harry listened to their conversation as Flitwick escorted them through the castle. At the headmaster's office, Flitwick gave the password to the gargoyle and bid them to say goodbye before they left. When the stairs stopped moving, Sirius knocked once on the door, and it cracked open at his touch. Sirius seemed to notice his hesitation and clamped a hand on his shoulder to lead him into the office. Harry felt faint as he watched Dumbledore rise from his desk and wave them forward.
Ah, Sirius, Harry, sit, sit.
Dumbledore looked far better than the last time Harry had seen him. He shook first Sirius's, then Harry's hand, and Dumbledore's strength struck him. Harry sat in one of the chairs positioned in front of the ornate desk and watched as Dumbledore settled himself in.
It was most curious to receive your letter this morning, Sirius. I do hope I will be able to help.
Harry felt a nudge on his arm, and he turned to his godfather. As you said, I'll likely be doing the convincing tomorrow.
Convincing?
Dumbledore asked, and looked between them. He spent the next half hour watching Sirius stumble through a story he barely knew, and answering the few questions Dumbledore posed.
Where did the differences in this world begin?
Dumbledore asked him, a finger resting on his lower lip. Sirius raised me, not my aunt and her family, Harry said to him. And I'd wager you found Voldemort's Horcruxes early in this world. Dumbledore's eyebrows rose, and he glanced at a portrait on the wall before returning his attention to Harry.
You would wager well, then,
Dumbledore said after a moment's hesitation. Was I one? Harry asked. Dumbledore shook his head.
No, Harry. Although the thought crossed my mind, you were not. I take it that it was different for you.
Harry nodded and swallowed hard. Do you recognize the curse, sir? Harry asked, releasing the grip he had on the arms of his chair. Dumbledore rifled through his desk. Retrieving a measure of loose parchment, he inked a quill and began writing.
I don't believe a curse is the culprit, though it is magic beyond what I am familiar with,
Dumbledore said to them. He slid the parchment across the desk, then rested his quill on its stand.
I grant you both access to the library. Just show that to Irma, or anyone who may stop you in the hall.
Dumbledore stood and made his way to the cabinet, which in Harry's time housed his pensive. He waved them over, and Harry folded the parchment and put it in his pocket as he joined the headmaster. Dumbledore opened the cabinet, and the pensive was just as brilliant as Harry remembered.
Do you know what this is?
Dumbledore asked.
A pensive, sir. Which memories are you asking for?
Dumbledore seemed to approve.
The last day of your normal life, from the moment you woke there to the moment you woke in another life. For long memories, it is easiest to focus on the first moment as you begin to remove it, and switch to the last as you continue,
Dumbledore instructed. Harry had removed memories before, but never such a long memory. He wiped his palm on his trousers before he grasped his wand and raised it to his temple. His eyes closed, and he did as Dumbledore asked him, careful to clip away the end of the memory, and opened his eyes as he directed the silver strand into the bowl. Sirius moved close behind him and peered inside for a moment.
I will review this. See if I can glean anything from it. I will peruse my own collection as well. You are both welcome, of course, to join the Great Hall for lunch and dinner.
Thank you, Sirius said.
Harry nodded to Dumbledore, then followed Sirius out of the office and down to the hallway.
Where do we start? Harry asked as they made their way through the quiet passages.
Time? Space? Fiction? Sirius grinned.
Madness?
I'm not mad, Harry said, and frowned.
It was a joke,
Sirius said to him, and pulled on his arm to still him.
We will figure this all out.
Harry looked at a torch on the wall in avoidance. Then Sirius pulled him into a tight hug.
I wouldn't mind staying here, Harry grumbled into Sirius's shoulder.
He felt the arm's grip on him tighter, bordering on painful.
Either way, we have to figure it out first.
Harry marveled at how Sirius handled Madame Pince. He glanced across the large table that they had settled at, noting the dozens of books scattered, piles of parchment, and most notably, at the pots of tea and coffee, all of which would have earned him weeks of detention at school. But somehow, the librarian only treated Sirius to a pleasant smile. More than one student had gawked at the state of their workspace, glanced at Pince, then moved as far from them as possible.
It's one. I'm hungry, Sirius declared and snapped a book closed.
I'll meet you there. I'm almost finished with this one, Harry said to him as he continued to scan the tome.
Take your potion, Sirius said, and his chair scraped across the floor.
Harry peeked at Madame Pince, who acted as if nothing had happened. 3 pages later, he closed the book and stood. He gathered the few that he'd finished and moved on to the stacks to reshelve them. Sirius may get away with his antics, but Harry was positive he would not. As he stretched to replace the last, someone snatched it from his hand. Startled, he faced Snape, whose eyes were flashing as he read the cover.
Muggle theoretical cosmology, Snape asked. 7 years after you graduate, you return to do a bit of light reading.
Snape put the book into its slot and turned his attention to Harry, who could feel his cheeks heat. He willed away memories of the previous day.
The headmaster gave us leave to use the library, Harry mumbled.
Clearly, Snape said, and tilted his head to the side.
Why?
Research, Harry tried. It's good to see you, sir.
Is it? Snape asked, his tone dark.
It is, Harry said to him, a faint smile on his lips. This Snape was easier to understand than the one from yesterday. He was well acquainted with a suspicious Snape.
Snape hummed. Research on what?
Harry glanced up at the spine of the book he'd skimmed.
Time, he said. I should catch up to Sirius before he comes looking. Perhaps I'll see you again before I leave.
Harry tipped his head and turned to move into the library proper, then left the library. Harry pulled off his glasses and pressed his fingers into his eyes.
Take your potion, Sirius instructed.
The potion won't stop my eyes from crossing, he grumbled.
It'll combat symptoms of fatigue, which will stop your eyes from crossing, Sirius said, and flipped a page.
Harry did as instructed, replacing the empty file as an upper-level Ravenclaw student approached their table. She mustered a polite smile and handed Harry a folded piece of parchment.
"From Professor Dumbledore,"
she said to him before spinning around and joining her friends. Harry read the brief note. "Dumbledore has a theory. Wants us to join him in his office."
"Thank God,"
Sirius proclaimed, and waved his wand, sending an army of books sailing to the stacks. Harry saw Madame Pince glance at the movement, then bent back over the parchment she had been reading. He shook his head and gathered the notes that he had taken into a stack, and rolled and tied them together. Sirius banished the scrap. The edges of the windows were golden from the late afternoon sun. Harry had forgotten how long the light would cling to the school's grounds. Sirius slung an arm around his shoulders, squeezing him as they walked.
"We'll figure this out," he said to Harry again, before he let his arm drop.
Harry tried to smile, and half succeeded, as they stepped past the gargoyle that moved aside at their approach. This time the office door was wide open, and the men entered to see Dumbledore behind his desk, nose in a book. He gestured with his hand.
"Sirius, Harry, please have a seat," Dumbledore offered.
He closed the book and placed it off to the side.
"Tea?"
"No, thank you, sir," Harry said. Sirius shook his head and rested against his chair's arm.
"Have you had any luck?"
"No, sir. I think I'm more confused than when I started," Harry said. He looked at Sirius, who nodded.
"They are not the simplest of subjects, even on a smaller scale than what we are facing,"
Dumbledore agreed. He tapped his lip as he seemed to consider. The headmaster folded his hands on the wooden top of his desk. He looked at Harry and met his gaze.
"I believe you are correct. The event seems to take place while you sleep. I hypothesize it is to protect your mind from the shift in reality. Whether that shift happens around you or to you, I am unsure."
"So we don't know if I'm traveling through time and space, or if it's changing around me," Harry confirmed. Dumbledore nodded.
"Yes. Even with all the knowledge and magic at our disposal, there are still many great unknowns. I have a theory as to why."
Harry shifted in his seat and tempered his hope.
"Why?"
Sirius asked, after a long moment. Dumbledore shifted back in his seat, pulling his hands from the desktop.
"The day before these events began, Harry, do you remember touching anything unusual?"
Dumbledore asked. Harry ran through that day in his head. It was all he thought about in recent days.
"The sickle?" Harry asked.
Dumbledore nodded.
"It is, in fact, a scythe. A sickle is the small version,"
Dumbledore explained, and held his hands a short distance apart.
"I believe, though I can't be positive, that it was an artifact known as the Scythe of Kronos."
"The father of the Greek gods?" Sirius asked.
"Kronos, Cronus, Saturn. The same entities, or different, depending on which literature you read,"
Dumbledore agreed.
"Fiction or none, the artifact in question is very real. Thought to be lost for over 2 millennia. I believe it was the object present in the Department of Mysteries that day. Harry touched and bled on the blade."
Sirius's head whirled in his direction so quick that Harry worried he'd hurt himself.
"You touched a magical artifact without knowing what it does?"
"Not my finest moment," Harry murmured. He looked at Dumbledore. "So, how do I fix this? There's no way I can take it back."
"I do not know," Dumbledore answered. "I have sent missives to some associates that call for urgency, but these things take time."
"Eventually I'll need to sleep. I can't stay awake forever."
"No, you cannot. I will consult with Madame Pomfrey to see how long we can safely keep you awake, and we will hope there is a reply soon. Once you fall asleep, if I can remember this conversation, I will not let the matter rest,"
Dumbledore said to him, then huffed a breath through his crooked nose. "And when I do," Harry asked, "how do I explain this to you all over again?" Dumbledore glanced across the room, then back at Harry.
"Pensive memories, of course," Dumbledore said to him.
Sirius unpacked the parcel he had retrieved from London, tucking the clothing into a thin chest of drawers next to Harry's bed in the hospital wing. Pomfrey had insisted on monitoring Harry, since they were
insistent on this asinine plan.
Dumbledore assured her that they were. Pomfrey had dedicated the private room at the rear of the wing to him, and the matron had set to applying many monitoring spells on him with a pinched look on her face. Sirius folded the clothes again, lining up edges and flattening creases in a manner that seemed out of character. "One of us needs to function well over the next few days," Harry said to him from where he sat perched on the foot of the bed.
"I can help keep you awake, keep you entertained," Sirius said, sliding the door closed.
"You heard, Madame Pomfrey. By tomorrow afternoon, my judgment and ability to function will deteriorate, even with the potion regime she has planned. I'll need you at your best," Harry explained.
"I don't like it," Sirius said to me.
"Me neither," Harry shrugged, and reached for the pajamas Sirius had placed on the bed. It scared Harry that wherever he appeared next, Sirius wouldn't be there.
"I don't say it much, but I love you, no matter which you are."
Harry looked away, and after a moment whispered, "Me too."
By sunrise, Pomfrey came for his final checkup. She gave him grudging permission to leave the infirmary, with strict instructions to return every 4 hours. He showered, dressed, and made his way through the corridors to the great hall for breakfast. In the early hour, the hall contained a handful of scattered students, and only Professors McGonagall and Burbage, the latter of whom Harry avoided looking at. McGonagall waved him over, offering a seat beside her. He dropped into the seat with a grateful smile and poured a cup of tea to nurse instead of eating. His potion consumption had left him with a finicky stomach. They made intermittent conversation, and after his second cup of tea, he bade her farewell and left the hall as Sirius entered. They agreed to meet in the library after an hour, and Harry walked through the castle doors, desperate for fresh air. He sat on the steps, leaning back against the cool stone, and closed his eyes, taking in the fresh Scotland air. He was asleep within moments. Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 4. For the first time in what felt like ages, Harry woke up and knew where he was. In fact, it was where he had fallen asleep. Hogwarts Castle felt like no other place. He pulled himself from the bed and pulled on the crumpled trousers flung over the chair nestled in the corner of his private quarters. Harry felt far better rested than he should, more so given the early hour. He pulled on a nearby shoe and nearly tripped over its mate in his haste. Harry spotted framed photographs arranged on the mantel of a stone fireplace and drew closer. There were pictures of Ron and Hermione, Luna, along with various other friends and Weasleys. One close to the edge featured Teddy, doubled over in giggles. Pensive, he'd face McGonagall or Dumbledore, and either way, Harry figured he could enlist their help. The corridor was chilly, and it took a few wrong turns to figure out which floor they housed him on, so by the time he reached the head's office, he regretted leaving the rooms without a jumper. The gargoyle guardian leaping aside at his approach should have been his first clue. The office door swinging open the moment his hand touched should have been his second. It wasn't until someone spun him around and pinned him against the wall, with a hand down his trousers and a nose nuzzling under his ear, that he realized it was neither Dumbledore nor McGonagall that held the head position. It was Snape. It took Harry a moment longer than he'd admit, disentangling himself and guiding the appendages from the less-than-appropriate locations. He'd also not admit how much he stuttered through,
"Severus, stop!"
while he congratulated himself for thinking quick enough to use the man's first name. Snape drew back, rolled his eyes, and pulled his dressing gown tight around himself.
"What can I do for you at 5 in the morning?
Snape asked, and leaned against the now-closed door.
I need your help, Harry said.
He glanced around the office, noting it was different from any other time he'd seen it. When he returned his attention to Snape, there was a teasing smirk on his face. Snape looked him over and said,
"I thought you asked me to stop."
Harry felt his cheeks heat and shook his head.
"Not that. It's important. I need you to see some memories, then I can explain," he said.
Snape's smirk fell, and he tipped his head in the pensive cabinet's direction. Once the memories were in the bowl, Snape moved so quick, Harry didn't have time to say another word. Harry sunk into the leather armchair positioned near the fire and distracted himself with perfecting the wrinkle-removing charm Mrs. Weasley had tried to teach him and Ron 5 years before. By the time Snape was straightening, Harry had made one wrinkle permanent and eliminated the rest. Snape stalked across the office and pulled on Dumbledore's portrait, something Harry had only seen once before, and closed his hand around a small file.
"I'd rather you use mind magic, if I have a choice," Harry said, once he realized what the clear file held. "I always feel groggy after Veritaserum wears off, and that's a bit counterproductive, wouldn't you say?"
"Would you allow me into your mind?" Snape asked, skeptical.
"I trust you," Harry said with a shrug. "Plus, you already know your world. It'd be quicker for you to find the difference that way. There's only so many hours in a day."
Snape was in his mind at the same time Harry realized he moved. He was 11, asking directions to Platform 9¾. He was clinging to Cedric Diggory's wrist as the Triwizard Cup hurtled toward him. He hunched over in the snow. Ron's voice was ringing in the background. Harry was in the office again as Snape lowered his wand.
"There," Snape said. "There's your difference. Weasley didn't return in time."
He calmed his breathing and said to Snape,
"That can't have been enough for you."
"I've been in your mind before. It was enough."
"You saved me, then?" Harry asked, though he knew the answer. "Will you help me now?"
"Don't I always?" Snape snarled as he dropped himself into the chair behind his desk.
Snape had sent him off with instructions to cancel his classes for the day, and a long list of books to acquire. He had not said a word more than that to Harry before he waved him away. Harry rushed down to his classroom, leaving a confused second-year Ravenclaw after he asked her for directions. He was attaching a notice to the door as a Hufflepuff and two Slytherin students approached. Harry waved to them and turned down the hall, rushing to the library. Pince was at her desk. She flipped through a stack of cards, making notes.
"Good morning, madam," Harry greeted as he moved closer. The headmaster sent a list."
Madam Pince gave him a strange smile and took the parchment from his hand.
"Touch nothing," Pince said, and disappeared into the stacks.
In record time she returned, arms full of tomes, and Harry rushed forward, taking them from her arms. He restacked them on the desk to be more manageable, then picked them back up.
"Thank you, madam," Harry said.
"Of course," Pince
said with another strange smile. He tried not to think about that as he left. When he shoved the office door open with his shoulder, he could hear Snape snarling at someone. He dropped the books on the desk and looked to the flue. Snape was on the floor, leaning in and arguing with someone, while Professor Flitwick made comments next to him, which Snape repeated in a more forceful tone. Snape stood and dusted himself off. He turned to Flitwick and said,
"It should arrive within the hour."
"Good, good. We need to examine it before we can hope to understand it. Oh, Harry, I didn't notice you'd come in. Tea?"
Flitwick asked and swung his wand, filling a teacup from a pot on the table in the sitting area.
"Thanks," Harry said. Snape turned to him. "You'll need to join us at the gates to receive the scythe. The Ministry only relented in us borrowing it once they heard the request came from you," Snape said. "I didn't request—" "They do not need to know that."
They sorted through the tomes while Flitwick gave a running commentary. Harry finished 2 cups of tea and 5 inches of notes before Snape announced it was time to greet the Ministry. Harry had spent little time with Filius, as he'd insisted Harry call him, outside of classes. He was coming to appreciate how he could chat through anything. The trek across the grounds was a pleasant relief from the headmaster's office, where Snape had given him strange looks which made him feel uncomfortable. When they were through the gates, Snape leaned against the closed one and crossed his arms.
"Did you feel anything when you touched the artifact?"
Filius asked. "Nothing more than from the slight cut it gave me. Nothing magical," Harry said to him. A series of loud cracks signaled the courier's arrival. Harry turned around. Aurors, three of them, carrying a long wooden box with rope handles attached to its side. Kingsley had sent Aurors, which seemed an odd choice. Harry didn't know any of them. Filius raised his wand, and an Auror reached out her hand.
"No magic, Professor. We're under strict instruction."
Harry frowned and walked closer, reaching to take the handle from her.
"Sorry, Professor Potter. The Minister and the Unspeakables were very particular. We are to carry the artifact and to not leave without it," the same Auror said to him.
"Let's not waste more time," Snape said.
He spun around and hastened back up the path. Filius had to move even quicker to keep up, so Harry slowed his pace to stay even with him, with the Aurors following. In the castle, portraits whispered as they passed. Once the box was on Snape's desk, he nodded at the Aurors.
"You may go."
"Sir, the Minister—"
"Kingsley said for you not to leave Hogwarts without it. You shall not. Do you believe the Minister for Magic does not trust the Hogwarts headmaster, the foremost charms expert in Britain, and Harry Potter?"
Snape asked, his impatience clear.
"No, sir, but—"
"Go to the kitchens. I trust you remember where they are. I caught you there enough. Explore the grounds. Visit Hagrid. I trust Matthews will keep you two from disrupting the students," Snape said.
Matthews, apparently, nodded, and the other two turned to leave with him. Snape watched until the door clicked shut, then set to work opening the crate. Flitwick and Snape removed the scythe, using dragonhide gloves, and Harry took its box from the desk so they could settle it down. For what felt like hours, Harry watched as they cast nearly 100 spells on, at, and around the scythe. He took notes for them, yet didn't understand most. By lunch, Harry was flagging. Snape and Flitwick both had sheens of sweat on their brows. A house elf brought lunch, and Filius collapsed into a chair and dug in. Snape spent a few more moments just looking at the blade before he joined them in the sitting area. "Any conclusions?" Harry asked, once they had a few minutes to eat.
"It's ancient, oozing with magic, none of which we can seem to identify. It's as if it's a different type of magic, one that I know I've never encountered before. Have you, Severus?" Flitwick said.
"No. Reminds me of Stonehenge. The Easter Islands, perhaps," Snape said to him.
"So, old magic? Could its name be literal?" Harry asked. Snape snorted, and Filius smiled.
"Depends on which gods you believe in. Academically, I'd say no, but we have not pinpointed the origin of magic. Could the gods of Grecian and Roman history exist? Perhaps. But if that's the case, I have more questions than answers. I'd believe them to be just as mythological as any other god, but that doesn't mean I am correct," Filius said to Harry. "Now, if that is the case, the answer would lie in mythological writing, which I'm told you've looked into before. My assumptions would be that, barring another explanation, you would need to apply your blood to the blade again. Or another's blood. Lovers and enemies? Perhaps die by it? Once we step from reality to mythology, it gets odd."
Harry nodded and stirred his tea, breaking up a clump of sugar still resting at the bottom. "We don't know the effects my blood could have on it if applied a second time, and I'd rather not have to die for it."
"Dying is not an option," Snape said. "I have kept you alive for far too long to end it now."
"Too right," Filius said.
"If we can't identify the magic, what can I do?" Snape sighed and leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees.
"Perhaps applying a drop of your blood to the blade will give us something," Snape said.
Harry nodded and emptied his cup. He wiped his hand on his trousers and stood up. Snape's desk had a small letter opener, so Harry picked it up as the others gathered near him and cast shielding charms. Harry pricked his finger and squeezed it to coax a drop of blood to well up. He raised his hand over the bladed end of the scythe and turned it over, watching as the drop fell and splattered on the metal. For a moment, nothing happened, and Harry felt his shoulders drop. Then the blade emitted a blinding white light, a loud, tinny ringing sound, and he knew no more.
"Harry! Harry!"
Ginny called before she burst through the bedroom door.
"You were supposed to..."
"Hmm?" Harry hummed.
"You look terrible. Are you ill?"
she asked, and felt his forehead.
"You do feel a bit peaky. I'll have him stay with Mum today, and you can have one of my days next week when you feel better, yeah? Can I get you anything before I run?"
"Sleeping potion?" Harry asked.
"Yeah," Jin said.
A minute later, she was back and placed the phial in his hand and curled it around.
"Drink. I'll stop by after practice."
Harry nodded, drank, and slept. Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 5.
"You can't keep doing this, mate."
Harry had never felt closer to death, including the time he had died. He grabbed his head and pushed himself to sit, eyes clamped shut after testing and finding that opening them was torture.
"Here," Neville said.
Neville pushed a phial into his hand. He fumbled with the cork and drained its contents. The potion set to work only moments later, cooling and dulling the pain that had taken over his body. Harry tried his eyes again, and this time it was safe. Neville stood near the door, his arms folded. He had a McGonagall-like air.
"What did I do?"
Harry asked. His voice croaked, and he massaged his throat for a moment, looking around at what he guessed was one of the Leaky Cauldron's guest rooms for some water.
"I helped set the pub to rights before I came up here, for a start," Neville said. "Tom's only not banning you from the place due to you being you. What would the public say?"
Neville moved toward the bed and sat next to him with a bounce. Harry got his wits about him enough to conjure a glass and fill it with water. His wand felt foreign in his hand.
"Kingsley Firecold, consider yourself on leave until you get control of yourself," Neville said to him, then refilled his glass for him.
"You don't have a sleeping potion on you, by chance?" Harry asked, already feeling this world wouldn't be the best chance at fixing what was wrong with his life.
"Not a chance. It's past 2 already. Get dressed, clean yourself and this room up, and I'll wait for you downstairs,"
Neville said, and clapped him on the shoulder. On his way from the room, he waved his wand, banished some of the rubbish, and the furniture arranged itself back to normal. Harry drained the glass and banished it before standing on shaky legs. He laundered and de-wrinkled his clothes with a couple of successful spells before he put the rest of the rooms to rights. A sack of galleons sat on the small desk, so he removed a healthy handful and stacked those on the splintered wood before pocketing the rest. He left the room and headed through the windy corridor and down the creaky wooden stairs to meet Neville at the bottom. Neville led him through the pub, then grabbed his arm in a tight grip. The apparition was unsettling. Their destination, number 12, was not. Harry trudged up the stairs, entered the house, and headed straight for the kitchen. Neville closed the doors behind them with a soft click and directed him to sit while he gathered a tea tray. When Neville had served the tea and toast, he sat across from Harry and seemed to just wait.
"What?"
Harry asked between bites of toast.
"You need to talk," Neville said to him and thrummed his fingers on the table.
"You go first, then I'll talk," Harry said.
His best chance of being taken seriously was if he knew what this world was like. Neville nodded and gathered his white teacup closer to himself. His reluctant nod worried Harry.
"We love you, Harry. We do," Neville said,
then broke his gaze from Harry's.
"Just say it, mate," Harry said.
"You're a mess, and I think you know it. We're trying to piece together a world that's been torn apart, and at every step we're fetching you from a gutter.
Neville stood, too restless to sit.
We'll keep doing it, you know we will. But one of these days, we won't have to anymore.
What do you mean? Harry asked, his stomach churning.
You'll be dead. The way you're going, it's inevitable. I'd rather it not be the case, so I'm asking you to please stop. Tell me what I can do to help. Please, Harry.
Neville looked desperate as he met his gaze.
I've a few questions, Harry started. They may sound silly.
Anything, Neville answered.
Is Voldemort dead?
Neville sat back in his chair with a thump. Harry had thrown him off, it seemed.
Yes,
Neville said, his voice questioning and higher pitched than usual.
Grand battle on Hogwarts grounds, the 2nd of May. Do you not remember?
How could you not remember?
I remember, but I told you they'd sound strange, Harry said.
Neville nodded and drained his teacup.
Go on, then.
Who did we lose? Neville's mouth dropped open. Harry waited for him to gather himself. Neville stood and ascended the stairs. Harry heard him moving even further up the house and refreshed their tea while he waited. A few minutes later, the sound of heavy footfalls descending the stairs preceded Neville's re-entry. He had a folded page from a newspaper in his hands. The paper landed in front of Harry, and he unfolded it. He remembered this article from the Prophet right after the war. A list of war dead. This one was bigger, longer, just more. He scanned through the names. Ron, Ginny. The only Weasleys to have survived seemed to be Bill and Arthur. Luna and both Creevies were further down. His year at Hogwarts, but for Neville and Hermione. Familiar names, such as Tonks, but Remus was absent. Oliver Wood, McGonagall, Flitwick, Slughorn, Snape. Both Elder Malfoys and what seemed to be all the Death Eaters graced the list. This world's battle was a bloodbath. Roughly 50 deaths in his time, this one had hundreds. Just as his eyes drifted from the page, he spotted Rubeus Hagrid toward the end. He dropped the paper.
Well, that explains it, Harry said, and drained his cup again. Can you get Remus here?
Hermione, maybe. Neville nodded.
Yeah, I'll invite them for lunch. We'll all talk then, yeah?
Yeah, Harry agreed. Harry watched as Neville flew around the kitchen preparing their food. He rebuffed all offers of help. Neville seemed to know his way around, perhaps better than Harry did. The front door opened and closed, and two pairs of feet clunked down the kitchen stairs. Remus looked tired but in good spirits, but Hermione looked awful. Dark circles hung low under her eyes, and she had pulled her hair into a knot at the back of her neck. Harry stood to receive the hug Remus seemed to want, and Hermione pulled a chair out and collapsed into it.
"Harry, Neville, wonderful to see you again," Remus said and patted Harry's back,
then turned and pulled a chair out for himself with care.
"Fortuitous timing. Teddy's just been handed off to his grandmother for a week."
"Hi, Remus. Hello, Hermione," Harry greeted and sat back down. "Thanks for coming by."
"What do you want, Harry?"
Hermione sounded exhausted. Neville directed plates and cups in front of them all, taking his own seat. Harry fiddled with a fork before folding his hands in his laps.
"This is easier with a pensive," Harry began.
Hermione's curiosity took over her face.
"They haven't replaced the pensive at Hogwarts. I wouldn't know how to gain another,"
Hermione said, then took a reluctant bite of roasted potato.
"I'm not mad. Without a pensive or mind magic, I won't be able to prove that, but I'm going to ask that you try to believe it."
Remus raised a hand to rest on his shoulder, and Harry could read concern on his face.
"Go ahead," Remus said.
"In for a penny."
"This world is wrong," Harry said.
He focused his eyes on the teapot at the table's center.
"I'm not saying that it's unfair, which it is, or that it's not ideal, which it isn't."
Hermione's chair scraped back as she stood and tossed her fork onto her plate.
Enough excuses! You're not the only one who's had to handle everything!
Hermione's raised voice wasn't enough to distract him. I'm telling you all that it's not the way the world is. Magically. A week or so ago, I touched something I shouldn't have in the Department of Mysteries, Harry explained. Hermione sat back down, her murderous expression fading from her face.
So it only happens when you sleep? Hermione asked.
Yes, well, except for the last time. I think I was stupefied, Harry said.
Do you think the magic is coming from you? Is it anchored in you, or are you anchored to it?
I wouldn't even know how to answer that, Harry said to her. Hermione stood, placing her notes on the table, and moved around to him. She took a deep breath and raised her wand and cast a series of spells. He didn't know them, but could tell by her words that they were medical in nature. The third sent a chill down his spine, and she grabbed his shoulder to hold him still. When the cold sensation left, she moved back.
You seem unchanged. Magically, anyway, she said, and retook her seat.
The room was quiet, and Harry looked up and watched Remus's eyes as they shot back and forth while he read. After a moment, Harry sighed and leaned back in his chair.
What is it?
Harry looked back up, and now Remus's eyes focused on him.
Since this thing happened, Dumbledore, Snape, Sirius, all of you, Professor Flitwick and I have researched, examined the scythe, and chatted about all this. I'm thinking it will never end, Harry said to him. While Albus, Sirius, Severus, and Filius are some of the best minds you could have on a puzzle, they only had one day to work on it. So will we. How many of your cases can be solved in a day? Remus said.
Most, if I'm to be honest, Harry said.
You need to have patience with this. We're talking about ancient magic that we don't know yet how it works, or where it comes from. I understand it's frustrating, but we will figure it out in the end, Remus said.
His lips turned up in a half smile, then he looked back down at his book. Reading, days on end, had made Harry restless. He stood and rifled through the unfamiliar cupboards. This version of him had bought a house in Godric's Hollow, and he was thankful that it wasn't James and Lily's. Harry found the cold cupboard and pulled out various ingredients to make a stew, then set to work. Blood on the blade hadn't worked. Perhaps his death would. That would have to be a last resort. Harry focused on his work, and once he covered the stew to cook, he was feeling ragged. He excused himself to take a shower and climbed the stairs, opening each door in the hall until he found his bedroom. The armoire held most of his clothes, and he selected a soft shirt and worn jeans, pants, and socks to take with him. He stood in the shower longer than usual, the water hotter than he liked, and just let his thoughts flow down the drain. His hands were pruned by the time he washed himself, rinsed, and stepped out. He left his shoes in the hall and headed back downstairs in his socks. The table was even more full of notes, and there was a rather lively debate going on. Harry moved past and uncovered the stew, stirred it, and then covered it again. He rested his hand on the worktop and watched the water condense on the pot's lid.
Harry! Hermione called.
Startled, he turned around.
Sorry, what?
Do you want us to go over what we've learned, so you'll know tomorrow? She asked.
He nodded and took his seat. Remus, Neville, and Hermione took turns talking, and he could only half pay attention. Harry would watch their mouths move, but the sound was beyond him. He felt lightheaded, and his ears rang. After a few moments he came back to himself, but they had stopped talking and were watching him with concerned expressions.
Perhaps you've had enough of this for today, Remus suggested.
Neville stood up, and Harry watched him move to the stove. He filled the bowls that were set there earlier and brought them to the table. Harry looked back at Remus and nodded.
I think I just need to sleep, Harry said.
Remus nodded and stood up as Harry did.
Let me help you upstairs. You wobbled a bit earlier.
Harry looked at Hermione and Neville.
Thanks for your help, he said to them.
Hermione nodded and frowned, and Neville said,
"Of course."
Remus guided him upstairs, and they stopped at the door to his bedroom.
"If I'm not there tomorrow, you must know I love you,"
Remus said to him, his voice catching.
"Yeah,"
Harry said. "Thanks for everything you've done. I'm sorry."
"You've nothing to be sorry for,"
Remus said to him. He grabbed Harry's shoulder and pulled him into a brief but powerful hug. He pulled back and met Harry's gaze.
"I'll be downstairs until you sleep."
Harry nodded and entered his bedroom, and left the door open as he climbed into bed. He listened as Remus went back down the corridor, and his footsteps trailed off as he made it downstairs. Harry closed his eyes, and for a while just listened to the distant murmur of voices, until he faded into sleep. Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 6. Before Harry even opened his eyes, he decided he wanted to skip this day. If the cramp in his shoulder would subside, he'd drift back off. A loud clatter of ceramic against stone took the choice from him. He opened his eyes and spotted the dark shape of a wizard walking from his cell. He was in a cell. Harry pushed himself up with effort and leaned back against the stone wall behind his cot to assess this world. He was filthy, sore, and hungry. The Malfoy dungeons, he guessed. If not, it was a very similar dungeon. There were three books piled near the cot, their covers torn or fraying. A shelf which housed what seemed to be more of the simple trousers and shirts he wore, and a toilet next to a basin that was hidden by a makeshift curtain. The source of the clatter seemed to be a tray, with a leaning white bowl and a pitcher of water placed just inside of the dark steel bars. He stretched his limbs and pushed himself up. It took a moment to find his balance, then he shuffled forward to retrieve what seemed to be his breakfast. The tray took up much of his cot, but it seemed a small sacrifice to avoid sitting on the floor. He ate the warm and sweet porridge with a generous dose of honey mixed in, which surprised him. The water was even better. Cool. After breakfast, he focused on wandless magic, as he didn't seem to have his wand. The only relief, he felt, was the spare thought that this world would disappear as soon as he could coax himself to sleep. Before then, he might help this world's Harry, if that's how it worked. Accio was the only spell he had any proficiency in, wandless. It took weeks of practice to summon his wand, and he had never managed more. He thought back to Flitwick's warnings on being vague.
"Without proper focus, one could, say, summon every pasty in the castle. I don't think the kitchen staff would appreciate that," Flitwick had said to them, a mischievous smile on his face.
The oil lamps in the dungeon didn't give him much to work with. Pebbles, stone, dampness. He wondered who was in residence, if any of them would notice their wand missing. Perhaps he was getting ahead of himself. Wandless, his task would be even more difficult. Harry eyed a large pebble just beyond the cell bars. He reached out with an open palm.
"Accio,"
he whispered. It didn't move. Again, he tried.
"Accio."
Harry closed his eyes and focused his magic, allowing for the buildup in his arm, as his academy instructor had taught.
"Accio!"
The pebble smacked into his hand, and he opened his eyes to inspect it. Jagged, as if it had just separated. He balanced it on the cot's wooden frame, and settled in to wait and see if they monitored the magic within the cell. Minutes went by with only his strained breath and the lamp's flame flickering. He eyed the cell's door. A blind summoning of a random wand in the building above could be the end of this adventure, and he didn't know what would happen if he died before he could sleep. Harry didn't know if his breakfast server would return with other meals. Opening the cell may be his only way.
"Dobby,"
he tried. After a few minutes,
"Winky?"
Through the darkness, the door to the dungeon room swung open, and light footfalls came toward him. Snape looked more horrid than ever. Harry pushed himself to his feet and met him at the cell bars.
Snape?
He ignored Harry and dug into his robe's pocket. 3 files emerged, and he handed them through the bars.
Drink, came the order.
Harry uncorked the files and drank the contents, one after the other, and grimaced after the third's thick viscosity. He felt better, stronger, and more clear-headed. He handed the files back. Snape eyed him with caution, surprised at the lack of fuss. It would seem Harry was always good at throwing him off, no matter which version he faced. Snape swung around, replacing the files in a smooth motion, and swept back in the direction he came.
Snape! Harry called.
He watched as Snape stopped short.
If there's a plan you have that requires my complete trust and ability to occlude, well, today's your chance to implement it.
Snape turned, hesitant.
Attempting a different tactic, I see. Are your cycles of insults and silence beginning to bore?
The sarcasm and derision were in full force today.
I trust you, Harry said to him.
He tried to push as much sincerity as he could muster into those words, grasping a cold bar in his hand to steady his weak body. Snape's hand twitched, and his eyes narrowed for a moment before.
Legilimens!
Harry pulled up his walls and reinforced them, pushing Snape from the entryway of his mind.
Are you testing the occlumency or my honesty? Harry asked, panting. Both, he answered after a moment. Legilimens!
This time, Harry let him in, holding the bar for dear life. The sorting hat telling him he would do well in Slytherin. The shade of his mother speaking to him.
Your father's coming. Hold on for your father.
Snape's eyes blank and empty, his hand thudding to the floor. Andromeda gripping his hand at Narcissa's trial as they read the verdict. Harry realized he had sprawled on the cold stone floor and his hip ached. Harry took a moment to reorient himself before using what strength he still had to push himself up.
You're delusional, Snape spat.
No, Harry denied. He used the bars to leverage himself to his feet. Not yet, at least. He rested his cheek against a bar, the cool steel feeling refreshing against his overheated skin. Tomorrow you'll have the same version of me you had yesterday. If you have a plan, it's got to be now. Snape's arm was at his side, hand gripped firm on his wand.
Your change in attitude will not please the Dark Lord, Snape said to him, and tucked his wand away.
I suppose I'm lucky you won't tell him then, Harry said, working to keep his voice calm and bordering on cheerful. Snape spun away, and his shoes made little noise as he exited the dungeon. Harry stumbled back to his cot and set to finishing his water. Harry thought it would be longer before Snape's return, but he was only on his 5th attempt at running through basic defensive and offensive spells when he heard the sweep of robes across the stone floor. He forced himself to stay sitting, conserving as much energy as possible, while Snape circled the cell and crouched outside it, setting colorful files inside the bars. Snape shoved an invisibility cloak, not Harry's, through after, and he set a familiar wand and trainers on top of the folded fabric. Snape stood and scowled as he looked at Harry, and he wondered what sin he'd committed now. He pushed himself up with less difficulty than earlier, and was more steady as he kneeled on the cold stone to drink the potions.
The green, last, Snape instructed.
Snape placed the tip of his wand against the cell's lock and flattened his other hand onto the metal plate beside it.
Once I speak the spell to unlock this, it will begin. You must stay hidden and silent. Cast nothing until we've left the dungeon. Nothing for any reason. Do you understand, Potter?
Nothing. Yes, sir, Harry said to him as he tightened his laces. The invisibility cloak was lovely, but a bit worn around the edges. It slipped on his skin nostalgically, but he concentrated on efficient movement and paying attention to Snape. The green potion was warm like tea as he swallowed it, and within moments he felt so alert his skin prickled. Harry hid the files under his cot and shuffled to the cell door, pulling the hood over his head and tucking the edges of the cloak around himself.
"You move to the far wall, and don't move a muscle until I say so," Snape instructed.
"And if you never get the chance to say so?" Harry asked. He realized Snape had been avoiding eye contact when he met his gaze.
"Then you wait as long as you can, despite anything that may happen. If the room clears, you leave," Snape said to him.
His voice had dropped lower than usual. Harry refrained from commenting and settled for a brief nod. Snape's attention resettled on the lock, and he was still for a moment before a string of Latin spilled from his lips, too quick for Harry to follow. At the end, the inside of the lock turned lava red, and the cell swung open. He moved, brushing by Snape, and positioned himself against his assigned wall. Harry adjusted the cloak once more and took aim with his wand beneath it. It would snow in hell before Snape would die for him again. For moments, nothing happened but for Snape casting a slew of revelios and analyzing spells. The room almost sparked with the amount of magic he was using, and for too long, Harry watched him cast, noting his bored demeanor. Footsteps thundered down the dungeon steps, and within seconds, the room erupted in chaos. Death Eaters, masked and unmasked, swarmed the room with their wands ready. There were faces Harry didn't recognize, but some he just didn't expect. They weren't Death Eaters in his world, or if they were, the Aurors had never known. Distracted as he was, he didn't realize for a moment that the group was rushing from the room in pairs.
"Wilkes and Browning, you will inform our lord," Snape ordered.
"What'll you do, Snape?"
either Wilkes or Browning asked, not happy with their assignment. In a flash, he received a wordless hex and fell back, catching himself on the stone wall before he hit the ground.
"I will be cleaning up your mess. Now go," Snape said.
The Death Eaters hesitated for a moment more before they turned up the stairs. Telling Voldemort bad news was not a pleasant task. Snape spun around and looked at Harry, as if he could see straight through the cloak.
"Stay close."
Harry checked the cloak once more before following Snape, who was already ascending the stairs. It was a longer stairwell than the one he'd been down before, but when they spilled out into a grand corridor, Harry could recognize the signs of Malfoy Manor. A few steps out of the dungeon door, a sharp pain shot through his head, and he leaned on the wall to stay upright. Harry pushed and struggled with the mental invasion, fighting harder than he'd ever had to before. His occlumency had improved, but he'd never tested it against Voldemort.
"We need to move," Snape said to him, his hand clenched on Harry's shoulder.
"Wait," Harry huffed out, able to hold together a memory of his time in the Forest of Dean long enough to buy them some time. The pain receded, not gone, but not debilitating.
"Okay, let's go," he whispered.
Snape yanked him down the corridor, and Harry followed, focusing only on the cloak and his wand. He didn't know if Voldemort's invasions were worse than before, or if he'd just been able to forget the true pain of them with the luxury of time. Harry came back to himself when his trainers encountered grass. Snape steered him through the Malfoy's garden maze and out along the far wall. After a few minutes, Snape yanked his shoulder and raised his free hand in the air, running it back and forth until he maneuvered Harry in front of him and pushed. There was a building here, invisible to outsiders. Snape slid in behind him and looked about as if there could be danger. Harry steadied himself and gripped his wand with so much force his hand ached.
"I have everything you will need,"
Narcissa Malfoy said as she rounded a corner in front of them. Snape's wand lowered.
"Galleons, muggle money, clothing for both worlds, preserved food, everything," she went on.
"Potions?" Snape asked.
"An apothecary's worth. Be aware while unshrinking them," Mrs. Malfoy instructed,
then turned and walked back into the room she'd appeared from. Snape followed and tugged Harry's hood from his head along the way. There was a circular dining table, tiny for Malfoy standards, that held two dragonhide knapsacks. Next to each was a change of clothing, folded flat and perfectly spaced, as if presentation was a habit she couldn't break. Andromeda and Shacklebolt will take shifts at the French border for the next week to speak for your entry. If you do not show up before then, it will only be Saturdays that you'll have someone to speak for you, Mrs. Malfoy said to Snape while he rifled through the larger knapsack. Are they destroyed? The Horcruxes, are they all destroyed? Harry asked. Snape stilled, and Mrs. Malfoy turned to face him for the first time. It was one of the few times he saw indecision on her face. Her eyes narrowed, and she glanced at Snape, who shrugged. Her head nodded, barely seen, before she looked back at Harry.
All but one, she said.
Mine, Harry said. Mrs. Malfoy seemed to be about to speak, but Harry continued. Does he have Dumbledore's wand?
Yes, Mrs. Malfoy said. However, was I ever here before? Did I take Draco's wand?
Harry pushed.
Yes.
This time Mrs. Malfoy frowned. Harry looked at Snape. Did Draco disarm him before his death?
Whatever your asinine plan, there shall be time later. Now we leave, Snape said in no uncertain terms.
Harry sighed. Yes, sir. Snape nodded once and continued his inventory of supplies. Harry thanked every trainer he had in Academy as he stupefied, incarcerist, and lowered Snape into a chair before the man had time to react. Mrs. Malfoy looked more calm than he'd expected as he pulled Snape's wand from his limp hand.
The snake is dead,
she nodded.
Make sure he lives. If I don't return, all it will take is one spell.
Another nod, and Harry slipped out the way he'd come. He'd been in Malfoy Manor in the latter days after the war. Narcissa and Draco had shown him around and welcomed him while working on Lucius Malfoy's case. Narcissa was a gracious host and had grown to be a lovely woman. Harry made his way through the manor with no resistance. The Death Eaters seemed out looking for him, which would make this easier. He was tired and stopped to rest every so often, but kept pushing through. It wasn't his body he needed, but his magic, and it was unaffected. He hid Snape's wand in his shirt, as he had done with his own before, and peeked through the cracked ballroom door. Voldemort was sitting on a bloody throne, looking no different from when Harry had seen him last. Harry breathed deep and hoped it wouldn't be too much of a fight before the plan was over. Every movement exhausted him. He could only hope this loop would end as he dropped the cloak, clutched his wand, and pushed the door open.
Big empty hall, Tom. Shouldn't your sycophants be milling about?
Voldemort said nothing, his red eyes following Harry as he moved closer.
What do you think? Will it be you, me, or both of us? Have you thought about it before?
You'll go back to your cage, Harry Potter!
Voldemort's eerie, high-pitched voice permeated the room.
No. You'll die, or I'll die. Or you'll die, then I'll die. Do you think you can get the spell off first? Harry asked.
Avada Kedavra!
The green lightning struck just above his heart, and everything went black. Harry didn't open his eyes at first, hoping he could just fall back asleep. After some time of listening to muggles go by, he gave in. Some strange flat, not his. Not that he knew of, anyway. He got out of bed, tripping on his trousers, and caught himself on the doorframe. The bathroom was small, and there were no sleeping potions inside. He found two calming draughts and one potion to relax his muscles, so he settled on those. It took longer to fall asleep, but soon enough, he did. Out of Place, written by Fei Li, read by Kaelin Wrights. Chapter 7. Something was poking Harry in the face. He waved it away, but it was incessant. Harry opened his eye in time for the hovering note to poke him in it. Sitting up and holding his eye, tears falling, Harry snatched the note out of the air with his left hand. Old Bell T, 10 a.m. Don't miss.
Once his eye was back to fighting form, he looked around the room. He seemed to be in a flat not unlike his own. The chain of a pocket watch was wrapped around his wand. As he stood, he pulled on the trousers crumpled on the floor and stuffed his wand in the wand pocket. The golden watch told him he had 30 minutes to make his meeting, so he hastened to finish dressing. Harry knew where the bell was located and gripped his wand as he apparated. The pub was quaint, old, even by London standards. The place was on one of Hermione's lists. He passed it a few times in his life when he walked to and from Tesco's. Inside, it was nicer than he'd imagined, though it seemed to be a Muggle tourist spot. He muttered a few laundering charms under his breath with a hand firm on his wand. They worked well enough. There were no patrons yet, so he took a seat at a far table and settled in to wait for whomever he was to meet with. A server arrived.
"Usual, Harry?"
He nodded, caught off guard. He glanced at her name tag. "Thanks, Irene," he said to her.
"I'll bring hers too for you,"
Irene said, before rushing off through a dark swinging door. Harry fiddled with the menu, held upright between condiment stands, and took in the pub's decor. The stained glass in the windows seemed to contradict the menu written on support poles in some kind of chalk. The pub was comfortable.
"Sorry I'm late. Getting out the door with Lucy and Adam lounging about is more tricky every week,"
Lily said, and pulled him up, wide-eyed, into a tight hug. He should have expected it. Harry hoped she didn't notice the delay in returning her embrace. He held on and willed away the tears forming in his eyes. She pulled back, a wide smile on her face, and draped her peacoat over the back of her chair.
"New seat? I'm up for a change," she said and grinned.
He cleared his throat and blinked a few times before sitting. Irene returned with a tray full of dishes, spreading them out on either side of the table, and chatted with Lily all the while. Harry fixed his tea and poured his ale into the provided glass, taking only a moment to decide that ale was the better way to go at the moment. The two women continued to talk once Irene's tray was empty, so Harry watched his mum's expressions and sipped ale. Irene took her leave, and Lily turned her attention to him.
"So, tell me about your week," she said, and fixed her own cup.
"Milk, no sweeteners."
How was yours?" Harry asked.
Lily narrowed her eyes, then lifted her shoulders.
"Fine enough. Lucy and Adam, both being home, are driving me mad. Love them both dearly, as you know, but they squabble constantly. You know it's me they expect to mediate, as your father just winds them up,"
Lily said to him.
"Any brotherly advice?"
Harry laughed under his breath.
"No, on your own for that. Could always threaten to send an owl to ask McGonagall's advice. That'd put fear into anyone."
Lily laughed, loud and free, her bright smile staying on her face even after.
"Maybe you'll visit soon?"
Her smile faded and looked more strained.
"I can make sure your dad isn't there. Though I do wish the two of you would talk."
She dug into her food, and Harry did the same. The distraction and ability to think was welcome. He didn't know if he wanted to further his agenda, or just take comfort in this world. One with his parents. And siblings.
"Let's do it," Harry suggested, his voice a whisper.
"What?"
Lily asked, and settled her fork on the edge of her white plate.
I'll come by. You don't need to shoo Dad away," Harry said with more confidence.
"You know, he'll bring up, well, him," Lily said with care in her voice. "I know the two of you aren't together anymore, but Dad won't drop it."
"Let him. It's fine. I'm sure it'll be all right," Harry said.
"Okay,"
Lily agreed, sounding unconvinced. Lily sidelonged him to the house, which was not the expected cottage in Godric's Hollow. It was a beautiful, manor-like farmhouse, or farmhouse-like manor. The fields surrounding the property were lush, and the sky showed no signs of the low clouds that had hung over London. Instead of heading inside, Lily led him around the building to what looked like a horse pasture. Two figures on broomsticks were overhead, and another was at the other end, lounging on a blanket with a book hiding their face. Harry followed his mother, who he noticed was just a bit shorter than him. He didn't know why he'd always assumed she wasn't tall. Across the pasture, he could now see a young woman lying on her stomach, reading. She had dark, curly hair that hung around her face and touched the edges of the book. The young woman reminded him a bit of Hermione until she looked up, and she looked so much like him. Same cheekbones, chin, eyes, though hers seemed to have more of a glow to them. A bright smile popped onto her face, and she stood in a second and threw herself at him, book forgotten, and squeezed harder than Lily had.
Harry!
He wrapped his arms around her and held on for as long as he could. The cruelty of the world came into focus then. This was a soul that had never been allowed to exist.
Hello, Lou, he said into her hair.
She squeezed him harder.
I didn't think I'd see you till summer. I missed you,
Lucy exclaimed once she pulled back.
Your last letter said all of nothing.
The flying figures landed a bit behind her. Harry watched as he answered Lucy.
I'm sorry. You must know that letter writing isn't my strong point.
James Potter and a boy of 13, perhaps, walked in their direction, clutching their brooms. Harry felt Lily's hand grab his shoulder and squeeze.
Harry!
The boy yelled. He dropped his broom and pushed past his sister to wrap his arms around Harry's middle.
Hello, Adam, Harry greeted and squeezed the boy.
He sent an apologetic look to his sister, who rolled her eyes in response and smiled to show that it was okay. When Adam let him go, he ran back over to pick up his broom, and James moved a step closer. He had expected his father to be upset with him, based on what Lily had said, but the look on his face was of restrained anger.
You're well?
James asked. Harry could hear the strain in his voice.
I am. How are you?
I've missed you, Harry said. His stomach clenched.
Fine. Is he with you?
No one's with me, Harry said and glanced away.
Dad, stop,
Lucy demanded. Harry's hand was grabbed, and he looked down to see Adam pulling him into the field.
Fly with me?
He asked and pushed his broom into Harry's hand. He wrapped his fingers around it and nodded. Adam grinned and collected James's broom, hopping on and rising up. Harry launched into the sky, falling into a game of chase with his brother, and let his cares float away. They flew until he was tired, then met above the middle of the field and lounged on their brooms. Stopped, the sound traveled to them, and Harry looked at the edge to see Lucy and his parents, red-faced and arguing.
"Don't listen to it," Adam said from his side. You know how stubborn Dad is, but he doesn't mean it. He says he doesn't mean it, just never to you.
It's all right, Harry said, and swung his broom around. Do I make it worse?
Sometimes. I mean, Luce and I get why, so does Mum. She says Dad can't be reasonable when it's about him. Lucy thinks Dad feels betrayed. I think he's an ass, Adam said to him.
Both, probably. Harry said as he understood who the argument was about. I should go try.
Every time you do, it gets worse, Adam warned.
Let's hope it doesn't, Harry said and flew down.
I swear, if you make him leave, Lily growled when he was in earshot.
I'm not leaving, Harry said, and three angry Potters turned to him.
He gave an awkward half-smile and looked at James.
Can we talk?
I'd rather not, James said.
Not what I asked, Harry said.
James frowned, and Lily decided for him.
Of course you can talk. We'll be inside. I can stay,
Lucy offered.
No thanks, Harry said, and smiled to her.
Harry watched as his family walked across the field toward the house and drank in the image.
I'm not reinstating you, James said once they were alone.
To what? Harry asked and turned back to him.
My will.
Harry smiled. I don't care about money.
What do you want? James asked. He crossed his arms and looked Harry over. To tell you I love you, I've recently come to realize how important saying that is. It startled James, and it took a moment for him to collect himself.
Are you still in contact with him?
I don't know. Does it matter? Harry asked.
It matters, James said in a lowered voice.
Let's go with the safe answer and say yes. Do you love me less? Harry asked.
It's not about love. You know that. We would have died, all three of us, James said, his voice turning into a growl as he continued on. Mum, me, and you. Your brother and sister would have never been born if that man had his way. You don't understand what you're doing by associating with him.
Harry took a moment to collect his thoughts. I love you, and you've no idea how long I've wanted to have a conversation with you. About anything, Harry said and looked off at the field for a moment before returning his attention. You'll never know what you don't know. I don't want to argue, so the best thing I can do is go. James frowned and nodded. Tell Mum and the others that I love them, Harry said, and apparated away to hide the tears in his eyes. Harry had the rest of the day in a calm world, and he refused to waste it. Hermione had sung the wizarding half of the Bodleian Library's praises so often over the past 2 years that he felt it deserved a look. Perhaps he'd return tomorrow if it worked out. The library looked and felt like the one at Hogwarts, only enormous. It was busier, dozens of witches and wizards navigating the rows, avoiding collisions with one another by chance. Navigating the trove would have been a day's work on its own, if not for one librarian, Anne, noting his vacant expression and offering her help. He was recognizable in this world. Anne led him to the row dedicated to Greco-Roman tomes, suggested a few, and supplied him with ink and parchment. 5 hours later, Anne had taught him how to consolidate his research, plied him with a wide-eyes potion, and went home. An hour after that, Harry left himself, armed with a 12-inch section of parchment and a wider understanding of the various gods of time. He decided he would spend the rest of the evening memorizing every word on that page. He regretted his failure to bring a traveling cloak as soon as he exited the grand building, and even more regretful for not noting down where he lived. He didn't know who his friends were. Number 12 was an option. If his parents were alive, Sirius was probably free. But with the heartache that colored his morning, he wasn't in the mood to set himself up for more. Ensconced in a booth at the Leaky Cauldron, he ate as he ran through his research, line by line. The table shook, and Harry looked up to meet the gaze of Severus Snape. It occurred to him how normal that was becoming.
May I? Snape asked.
Harry nodded. Sure.
You met with your father today, Snape said.
Harry startled, then a grin grew on his face.
You don't say. Should I bother to ask how you know that? Your sister is a busybody, and your brother frets. They had concerns, Snape said.
Because I left? Harry asked.
No, that was expected.
Why then? Snape's head tilted, and his lips hinted at a smirk.
You were calm. No shouting. They never once suspected violence. Adam believes someone is masquerading as you. Lucy assumes you're emigrating, and that was your farewell.
So they contacted you? Harry asked, his curiosity getting the better of him.
Not for the first time, Snape said. So, which is it?
Harry thought for a moment. Neither, and both.
What is that supposed to mean?
Snape's voice had lost its teasing lilt and gone hard. Harry fought the urge to tell him everything.
A joke. Don't be angry with me. Not today. It's been...
Harry sighed and pushed up his glasses to rub his face for a moment before replacing them.
Just not today.
When he looked back across the table, Snape was reading his notes. Harry reached for the parchment, and Snape twisted to avoid him, while his eyes scanned. Finished, Snape dropped the notes onto the table and met Harry's gaze. It took a few seconds to realize what was happening, and as soon as he did, Harry cleared his mind and pushed Snape out. "How dare you?" Harry asked. Snape sat straight, and Harry noticed his arm moving. Toward a wand, he assumed.
"Who are you?" Snape asked.
"You know who I am. Are you looking to duel in a pub?" Harry asked. His eyes flickered to Snape's wand arm and back.
"Where did we meet?"
Harry scoffed. "There's no time for this. It's too late in the day," he said.
"Where?"
Snape asked again. "When I was 11, at Hogwarts," Harry said, and pulled together his things. He stood, dropped a handful of coins on the table, and made his way through the crowded pub. Only a few steps outside of the pub, he felt pain as Snape grabbed his shoulder and whirled him around. Snape's wand was an inch from his nose.
"Where is he?"
"He is me. I shouldn't have lost my temper, but you've no right to traipse into my head," Harry said.
"Harry does not know how to shield his mind," Snape said. "You gave yourself away."
"Been poking around my mind, have you?" Harry asked. "Clearly not the first time, if you know that as a fact." A bright flash to his left distracted Harry long enough for Snape to cast
Stupefy!
He pushed himself up and swung his legs over the side of the bed. Harry took a moment to untangle the duvet from himself and stood for a moment, comforted by the sight of his apartment. He took a quick detour to the toilet, washed his hands, then opened the cupboard. A level 2 sleeping potion. Overkill, but it would work. Harry made his way back to bed, drank the potion, and was asleep before he corked the phial.
"Wake up, you lazy thing," a voice grumbled in his ear.
Harry groaned and swatted at the noise.
"Up, you'll be late."
"Good," Harry grumbled. The man sat before he shook Harry's shoulder. When Harry opened his eyes and realized it was Snape, he bolted upright.
"Are you ill?" Snape asked.
It took Harry a moment to understand the question and figure out an answer.
Yeah.
Snape nodded and felt his forehead.
"No fever. I'll leave you a sleeping potion and check on you after morning classes," Snape said.
When he walked away, Harry relaxed into the bed, letting his heart calm. Snape returned and set the potion on the bedside table, and half lifted one side of his lips in a facsimile of a smile, then left. Harry took the potion, drank it, and dropped the phial on the floor. Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 8.
"Hun, you all right?"
Harry's shoulders shook, taking his body with it.
"What?"
he asked the woman. Blonde, pretty.
"You're late for work. I would have woken you earlier, but I didn't know you'd sleep in," she said to him. "I was going to drive today, but I'll take the tube. You'll need it to get there in time. I've got to go. I'm sorry."
She kissed him on the head and darted from the room. The ability to fall back to sleep left him, as confusion took over. He sat up and looked around, surprised his vision was clear before he put on his glasses. The room was simple but neat, not even his usual trousers on the floor next to the bed. Harry heard a door open and close across the house and got up to rummage in the chest of drawers. He found jeans and a Rolling Stones t-shirt and dressed. A glance in the mirror showed he'd cropped his hair shorter than he'd ever worn it. The bedside table had a wallet, a key ring, and a Muggle cell phone, but no wand. Harry filled his pockets and headed out, grabbing a jumper near the door. There was a light rainfall, but nothing that needed him to go back to the flat for an umbrella, and he walked through the streets for a few minutes before he recognized the area of London he was in. Two stops on the underground took him close to number 12, and he walked down looking for it. He was confused for a few minutes when he realized there was no 12. But yet he could remember the address. Fidelius was wonky with dimensional travel.
Harry headed back out, this time for Diagon Alley. The leaky cauldron came into focus as normal, and the patrons did not spare him a glance as he pushed through the building and out the back. Luckily, he was in time to follow a witch through the wall. Diagon Alley wasn't as crowded as normal by this late in the morning, and it wasn't abandoned. He spied Madame Malkin as he passed her shop, rushing around between customers. Ollivander's shop looked as it usually did, and he climbed the steps and entered. A witch, from what he could tell was a few years older than him, helped him through trying wands. He'd told her he broke his, and she was happy to find a replacement, and Harry was surprised and pleased she accepted the Muggle pounds he carried. Simple spells seemed to exhaust him, and he thought his body wasn't used to doing magic. Apparition wasn't an option. The walk through the rest of Diagon was surreal. No one looked his way, even at Gringotts. They only asked if he had an account before changing over his money into wizarding currency. The exchange rate was ungodly. By lunch, he'd explored Diagon Alley to its fullest, found no one he knew personally, and headed to the flue at the leaky cauldron, dropping a few sickles into the jar next to the flue powder. The Three Broomsticks was empty in comparison, and he sat down at a nearby table to settle his stomach after the long journey. Madame Rosmerta treated him kindly, but with no recognition. Even when he was 11, people who knew James would look closer at him, trying to understand where they recognized him from. But everyone he'd interacted with seemed more interested in his Muggle attire than in him. "Is Albus Dumbledore still headmaster of Hogwarts?" Harry asked as she delivered his lunch.
"Dear no. Headmistress McGonagall took over for him as he stepped down some years back. Focusing on research is what he said, but we all know the attacks were further apart once he had more time," Rosmerta said.
"Attacks?" Harry asked.
"The Death Eaters, I mean. Dumbledore scares 'em," she said with a smirk.
Harry ate his lunch as he stared through the window to watch people pass. Shopkeepers he knew, students above and below him at school. No friends or colleagues passed by, however. He decided on Hogwarts next, and tipped Rosmerta well before leaving in that direction. Scotland was sunny, so the walk up the path was rather pleasant. The gates didn't open on his approach, nor when he touched them. He thought about returning to Hogsmeade, but tried something else instead. Harry pulled out his new wand, Aspen, Phoenix Feather, 11 inches, sturdy, and aimed toward the path.
"Expecto Patronum," Harry cast, and despite his earlier issues with the wand, a silver stag darted out from the tip and ran in a circle to turn and face him.
"Tell the headmistress that Harry Potter is at the gates."
The stag gave a deep bow, then shot through the air, legs running as if it were on the ground, and toward the castle. In less time than he expected, McGonagall appeared on the path, her quick stride at odds with her grounded personality. She stopped on the opposite side of the gate and looked him over.
"Hello," Harry said, not having prepared. "You look like he would look," McGonagall said.
I'd hope so, Harry said.
"How do I know you are who you say?" she asked.
"Scar?" Harry asked and pointed at his face. "Veritaserum, if you must."
Her eyes focused on his forehead, then she nodded and said,
"Veritaserum, follow me."
One gate creaked open at her words, and Harry slipped through. A heavy clang behind him told him it had slammed closed. McGonagall moved just as quick back as she had done when she came to greet him, and Harry hastened to keep up. There were several groups of students in the courtyard and wandering the grounds that told Harry most classes must be over for the day. Some students glanced up or greeted McGonagall as she passed, and she responded to each with a nod. They looked at him with curiosity, but nothing more. Her office was identical to the one from home, nothing out of place or cluttered, but comfortable. She offered a seat on the other side of the desk, then wrote a note on a spare bit of parchment, folded it, and waved it away with her wand. It shot under the office door and away.
"Our potions professor will be here in a moment," McGonagall said to Harry as she wrote on a larger sheet of parchment.
"I'd request only questions to verify my identity," Harry said. She put her quill on a stand and capped the bottle of ink before she looked up at him.
To verify your identity, and to be sure you will not harm the staff or students here, McGonagall said.
Agreed, Harry said.
Where have you been, Mr. Potter?
McGonagall asked. Don't you want to wait for the potion?
I can ask if you've misled me later, she said, her voice light and a smile on her lips.
True. Living as a muggle, it seems, Harry said, pulled his muggle identification from the wallet and slid it across the desk.
It seems, she asked.
It is a very long story that I don't want to talk about.
Very well, she said.
McGonagall looked displeased with his answer. She stood and walked to the window and attached the letter to her owl, who took off after she said,
Albus.
The door opened behind Harry as she sat back down, and Snape swept to her side, the door shutting when he'd placed the phial of clear liquid in front of her. He looked Harry over.
Who is this? Snape asked.
Look closer, McGonagall said to him.
Harry turned to him so Snape could get a good look. Snape looked for what felt like eternity. Then his eyes widened, and he said,
Potter?
Hello, Professor Snape, Harry said.
He's dead,
Snape said to McGonagall.
Perhaps not, she said.
Decidedly not, Harry said.
Would you like to...
Yes, of course, McGonagall said. I'll have tea brought up for after. Severus, would you mind dosing him? Harry, I will only ask what we agreed.
Thank you, Harry said, as Snape moved closer with the bottle. He uncorked it, and Harry stuck out his tongue and tilted his head back. After the third drop fell, Harry sat back. No matter how many times he'd taken the potion, it surprised him there was no flavor. His muscles loosened, his face slackened, and a warm fuzz took over his senses. He shook his head, and it felt like he moved in slow motion.
What is your name? McGonagall asked.
Harry James Potter, he said, his tone flat. Harry looked at her.
Has that always been your name?
Yes.
Who are your parents? She asked.
James and Lily Potter, Harry said.
Where are they?
Dead.
That answers that, McGonagall said. Why did you come here today?
I came to see if anyone knew me, Harry said. He concentrated for a moment.
You gave your word.
It may have been relevant, McGonagall explained. I shall take more care. Do you oppose Voldemort?
Yes, I did, Harry said. He felt panic rise, breaking through the haze. He's dead. There's nothing to oppose.
How do you know if he's dead? Snape asked.
Severus, you know better, McGonagall said.
I killed him, Harry said. This was going wrong. He mustered the effort he could and fought to clear his mind of the haze.
When did you kill him? Snape asked.
Severus!
McGonagall sounded angry.
1997,
Harry said, then forced his jaw closed. He closed his eyes, body tense, grabbed the arms of the chair, and fought. He heard McGonagall and Snape arguing, but pushed it away.
Harry, relax. We will ask no more. The effects should fade in another minute or so,
McGonagall said to him, her voice strained.
Open your eyes.
After a moment, Harry allowed himself to settle. He opened his eyes, and McGonagall was leaning over him, holding out a handkerchief. He looked up at her, and she gestured to her nose with her free hand.
You're bleeding, she said.
Harry accepted the handkerchief, folded it, and pressed it to his nose. The metallic taste of blood was breaking through, and he could feel that she was correct. The effects of the potion were fading.
I apologize for Severus, she said.
Snape tried to interrupt, but she held up a hand in his direction.
Despite whatever happened in 1997, you know who lives again.
She fixed him a cup of tea, adding far too much sugar and lemon, then placed it in front of him next to a potion.
For the headache you must have.
It's all right, Harry said. He pulled the handkerchief away and checked his nose. It seemed to have stopped bleeding.
Thanks. Harry drank down the potion, but left the tea. He felt too nauseous. May I get some air? He asked.
Of course. Severus will escort you outside, McGonagall said pointedly.
Harry nodded and stood. He grasped the desk as he swayed for a moment. Steady, he turned to the door to find Snape waiting there with it open. He did not look pleased. Snape spun around and exited, not waiting a moment longer.
Return within the hour. We have more to talk about, McGonagall said.
Yes, ma'am, Harry said over his shoulder, and followed Snape. Harry expected Snape to lead downstairs, but instead he ended up climbing the astronomy tower. He hadn't returned there since the end of his sixth year. He was out of breath when they reached the top, but his lungs rejoiced in the open air. Snape walked off to the side, and Harry grasped the rail with both hands and closed his eyes. He breathed deep for a bit. This day had felt longer than many of them.
The Dark Lord could not have met with you that year, Snape said.
You can't know that, Harry said.
I can.
You're a spy, not a babysitter, Harry said. There was a swish of fabric, and Harry knew without looking that a wand was being aimed at him.
Just bloody do it, Harry said. Stupefy, if you don't mind. Anything that'll knock me unconscious for a bit.
Who are you?
You know who I am, Severus, Harry said, and opened his eyes. The sun was setting, and the sky was filled with orange and pink. There was pressure in the middle of his back, his thin jumper and shirt not protecting against the tip of a wand. Harry laughed and wished he'd gone back to sleep this day as well.
Severus Snape, born the 7th of January 1960, to Tobias and Eileen Snape, Harry said, and the wand pressed harder. Met Lily Evans at age 9 and became best mates.
Snape said nothing, but the pressure on Harry's back was turning into pain. He thought Snape may snap his wand that way.
At 15, you fought with her. 17, you joined Voldemort. And 20, you told Voldemort of a prophecy, Harry went on. He expected a spell at any moment. When you found out what that prophecy meant, you switched sides to save her life. Now you'll do whatever it takes to rid the world of him for good. Even threatening her son, it seems.
The wand left his back, and Harry shook his head. He'd have to see this day through to the end. Harry turned and saw a different Snape than he'd expected. Instead of being angry, he looked sad.
She forgave you, Harry said to him.
You are an accomplished liar,
Snape said, an edge in his voice. Unfortunately, not. Harry slid to the side and walked around Snape. He dropped a hand on his shoulder as he passed and walked back to the stairs. I saw people coming up the path. Dumbledore must be ready to interrogate me. He spent the rest of the evening answering endless questions. Harry found out that there was nothing left of the house and no trace of the Potters after Voldemort's attack. Snape spent the evening alternating between staring at him and refusing to meet his eye. When Harry settled down in a castle guest room, he noticed the ring on his finger and spared a thought for the woman whose husband went missing that morning. His eyes shot open, and in the dim light he could recognize his bedroom at number 12. Ginny's red hair was barely visible under the blanket, but her snore gave her away. Harry frowned and pushed himself from the bed, pulling on his dressing gown from the floor. Harry would not make the same mistake as yesterday. He stumbled into the ensuite and pulled open the potions cabinet. A few phials fell into the sink. One broke and ran into the drain, but Harry paid it no mind. He quaffed the sleeping potion as soon as he found it and stumbled back into bed just as it pulled him away. Out of Place, written by Fei Li, read by Kaelin Wrights. Chapter 9. Content warning. Mild suicidal ideation in the third paragraph. Harry was tired of what was happening. He'd just woken up a few minutes ago, wrapped around another person, warm and comfortable. Snape snored quietly with each exhale, and Harry just watched.
Outside of this room, number 12 Grimald by the looks, was a world of unknown. War, peace, the living, the dead. It was all unknown, and Harry was just bloody tired of it. He wondered if he topped himself, would this mad cycle continue? Or would he just wake up the next day in a world where Ferenz was minister and Pettigrew was headmaster of Hogwarts? Even Voldemort's Avada had just pushed him on. Snape rolled onto his stomach, and his hand came to rest on Harry's thigh. Harry sighed and rested his head against the headboard. Every day the sun dawned on a new world, and he was bleeding tired of it. Harry swung his legs to the side and hopped out of the bed, pulling on the trousers that were crumpled on the floor, and a tee that seemed to be his that was draped over the chair in the corner. Shoes, socks, pocket watch, and wand. He took one last look at the watch face and slid it into his pocket.
"Early,"
Snape grumbled from the bed. Harry didn't hesitate as he reached for the door handle. "No time to lose," he said over his shoulder before exiting the room. It was 4:30 in the morning, and Remus and Bill were nursing large mugs of tea in the kitchen. War and living, so far at least. Harry nicked a triangle of toast from the plate in front of Remus and pulled a roll of blank parchment from the corner of the worktop. He inked a quill and scribbled out everything he could remember of his previous day's work, sparing a thought for what his school days would have been like if he'd put in more effort. He was halfway up the stairs before thinking better of it, and turned around, stepping back into the kitchen. Both men were watching him. "Do either of you know anyone that could get me into the Bodleian Library, or should I bring my cloak?" It was a comfort to see Anne unlocking the library doors, though by the looks of her she didn't feel the same. Bill thanked her and apologized in a continuous cycle, citing the war as their reason. The poor woman pulled her dressing gown out of the way as the massive door swung open, stifled a yawn, and nodded her head at Bill. Harry had the parchment out of his pocket for only a few seconds when the witch snatched it from him and hastened through the rows, waving her wand and muttering accios, pulling the requisite books from their homes. Before he could thank her, she shoved the stack into his arms and studied the parchment again.
"You'll want the Encyclopedia of Magical Artifacts, Southern Europe, 346th edition," she instructed, then summoned that series of tomes from the shelves and handed them off to Bill.
Anne slapped the parchment on top of Harry's stack and strode back toward the entrance.
"This better end this blasted war, William. If any of those have so much as a creased corner, you'll have more to fear than you know who," she warned.
Harry flicked the last memory he thought relevant into the pensieve that Remus had secured. He didn't think he'd be able to get one, but Harry had to hand it to him. He waved his hand toward it as he moved to the end of the massive table that now took up a large part of the walking space in number 12's library. Just as he finished sorting the tomes into piles, he was interrupted.
"You're up early," Jenny said, and hopped up to sit on the table.
Her hair was as messy as his, and her harpy's tea had seen better days.
"You're wearing pink," Harry said with a look at her shirt.
"It's Lee's," she explained.
Harry grinned and shook his head.
"What's going on over there?" Ginny asked.
"The latest disaster of being Harry Potter," he explained. "Take a peek when they come out."
Harry should have enlisted Ginny when this first began. By 8, most of the Order of the Phoenix had viewed his memories, and by 9, dozens more books were added to the table, with anyone who could read searching through them. Snape had exited the pensieve without a word an hour before, and disappeared soon after. Dumbledore appeared a few minutes later and followed the same way. Hermione was half reading aloud and half theorizing, while Remus shot down the more convoluted theories.
"The issue we keep running into is when the scythe is mentioned, the writers confuse Kronos with Kairos. They referred to the scythe as belonging to one, then the other," Hermione groused.
"So instead of an SOC, it's a pair of SOCKs.
Just got to match them, then," Ron said, looking over Hermione's shoulder at her notes.
"Socks?" Tonks said.
By the time Harry had figured out the acronym, Remus had stood and clapped Ron on the back.
"Scythes of Kronos and Kairos. The original translations of some of these texts could suggest there are two unique artifacts.
Activating one by blood would have disastrous consequences. Reuniting the two could balance it all out, Remus said to her.
Kind of poetic, don't you think? Time's fluctuating until it encounters the moments that matter, Ginny said with a smile.
So, are they different worlds? Harry asked and set his quill on its stand.
They can't be, Remus answered. One world, just rearranging itself. It makes sense that all the changes between them have been in your lifetime. Your blood, your time, your moments.
So my world doesn't exist? Harry asked. He could feel his heart sink.
No more or less than this one, Remus said. It's all real, Harry. We're the same people. Moments in time may change our paths, but it doesn't change our hearts.
I had a brother and a sister, Remus, Harry said. In one of those places, there were people that never existed in this one or the others. What does that mean? Remus glanced around the room for a moment before meeting Harry's gaze.
I don't know. I'm not sure that's a question a mortal man can answer.
Harry had a shower after lunch. That consisted of stew and a round of potions meant to keep him alert and at his best. According to Moody, Dumbledore had reassigned the order to researching and tracking down the scythes. Moody had seemed too happy about it, but when asked, he said to Harry that the only thing better than fighting a war is having won it already. After he dressed, he sat on the chair in his room, twirled the wet ends of his hair, and enjoyed the first moments of quiet he'd had that day. He jumped when the door shot open, and Snape strode across the room and pulled a book from an overfilled shelf. When he turned back, he stilled as he spotted Harry.
I apologize, Snape said.
It's your bedroom, too. I assume, anyway, Harry said. Snape lifted the book to curl his other hand around it, too. To Harry, it looked like a shield. Are you avoiding me? Harry asked.
Do you not wish me to? Snape asked.
No, I don't wish you to, Harry said to him. Snape took a step back and pulled the book closer to himself.
According to your memories, the last time you saw me, you were 17 and knew me to be a traitor, however incorrectly, Snape said, his eyes narrowed.
By the time I turned 18, I was telling everyone who would listen that you were the bravest person I'd ever met. I've seen you nearly every day for the past fortnight. You saved me from life caged in a dungeon. You've spent hours helping me figure out my current crisis, he said.
Harry slid himself back into the armchair and rested his ankle on his knee.
It is easy to extol the virtues of the dead.
Every day since this all started. No, every day that you've been alive since this started. We have been connected, together at some point.
Why do you think that is? Harry asked.
Snape's upper lip twitched. Then he sighed and dropped his hands to his sides.
Fuck if I know, Harry, Snape breathed.
What do you want?
I want, Harry laughed, I want this cycle of madness to end. I want the people I love to be alive, wherever it ends. I'm losing it, Severus.
Harry pulled both legs into the armchair, hugged his knees and rested his chin on one. His stomach was tight and his head swam.
I can't do this much longer, Harry continued when he felt ready, as Snape looked on. I'm forgetting where I came from, which cases I was working on, the name of the witch at the coffee cart, why I had set an appointment with my solicitor.
Snape stepped closer and crouched to Harry's level. He said nothing, just looked and waited.
It's not even real anymore. Nothing's there waiting for me. When this stops, it could be in a place where the war is lost and everyone's dead, Harry whispered.
His heart felt as it had when he saw the bodies of those they'd lost in the Battle of Hogwarts. Snape reached out and pried one of Harry's hands from its tight grip on his leg. Harry watched as he readjusted it and himself to hold it tight within his own. Snape's hand felt good, like a lifeline.
Pity party, Harry? Snape asked as his eyebrows raised.
Harry pulled his hand back as anger boiled in his blood.
but Snape didn't release it. He was sturdier than Harry had thought.
"You're stronger than that," Snape said to him.
A faint smile came on his face.
"Whichever life you end up in, you improve it. There will always be people that love you."
Snape nodded once and released Harry's hand as he stood. He withdrew a roll of parchment from a pocket and settled in at the small table in the corner. His book was opened, and he arranged a quill and ink in moments.
"You can't know that," Harry said as he shook his head. "How can you know that?"
Snape rested his hand on the tome and looked over at him, a smile again playing on his lips.
"No matter where you are, you can't help but make the world better. And people can't help but love you," Severus said, and turned back to his work.
Tonks burst into the library, the door clattering against a shelf.
"We have one!"
Harry looked up with everyone else as Kingsley and Moody entered, levitating a long item wrapped in a thick cloth between them. They cleared a space on the table and set it down. Moody reached out and unfolded the cloth. It wasn't the same scythe Harry had encountered before, but it was very similar. Longer, with a thinner blade, the hints of color remaining on the handle made it look newer, if only a bit.
"And the other?"
Remus asked as he stood to look over the object.
"Bill and Fleur are on their way. If it's where we think it is, they'll bring it in a few hours," Kingsley said.
Harry was afraid to let himself hope. He was afraid of what would happen if this was a success. Would he stay here, or end up in an even worse place? With a forced smile, he thanked them and excused himself. The rain was heavy. Harry stared at the downpour through his bedroom window. The water gathered in large puddles that seemed to combine and grow together.
"This is good news," Severus said.
Harry hadn't noticed him come in.
"If it doesn't work?"
Harry asked, and turned around, leaning his back against the cool glass.
"Then it does not work. You will have one less thing to try."
Severus closed the door behind him and circled the bed. He sat on it, facing Harry.
"And if it works?" Harry asked.
"Then it is over, and you no longer have to worry about every nap."
"What if everyone's dead? What if you're dead?" Harry asked.
He looked down at his shoes and could feel his cheeks heat. The hand felt heavy on his shoulder. Harry hadn't heard him move. Severus pulled him forward and wrapped his arms around Harry, whose own followed suit. He rested his chin on Severus's shoulder.
"It will be as it should," Severus said, close to his ear.
His instructions were simple. A dozen witches and wizards stood around him and the table, all holding up strong shield charms. The scythes laid on a dark cloth side by side in front of him, not touching, but close. Harry took a deep breath, let it out, and pricked his finger with the pin. One drop of blood on each blade, and he backed up to the edge of a charm, which dissipated long enough for him to back through. He averted his eyes, and a bright light enveloped the room, as a burst of magic hit the shields. It faded as quickly as it had started, and Harry looked back over. Only one scythe lay on the table. Dumbledore pushed through and peered at it.
"They seem to have merged,"
he announced after a moment.
"What does that mean?" Ginny asked as she lowered her wand. "I expect we shall find out in the morning," Dumbledore said to her. "Or at least Harry will."
The stairs coming from the room were uncomfortable.
"I'll go then," Harry said, and turned for the door.
Once in his bedroom, he changed into the pajamas he'd pulled out earlier and lay his wand on the bedside table. He pulled back the quilt and slipped under, then uncorked the phial that was left for him. The door opened and Severus entered, closing it behind him.
"I just wanted to wish you luck," Severus said, and moved forward.
"Stay?"
Harry asked, and scooted over. Severus towed off his shoes and sat, swinging his legs up onto the bed.
Harry drank the potion and settled down into the pillows as Snape put the empty phial back. Harry fell asleep to the sensation of fingers running through his hair. Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaelin Wrights. Chapter 10.
Is it over? Harry asked before he bothered to open his eyes.
It's over, came the reply.
Startled, his eyes flew open, and he looked around for the voice. The room was gigantic and white. It reminded him of...
Am I dead?
Harry asked as he pushed himself from the ground.
Definitely no. You are quite alive, Lily said as she helped him straighten up.
She took a step back and smiled at him, her head tilted to the side.
Why here, then, again? Is it the same place?
Harry asked her, his head spinning as the white took shape. Soon he recognized the Great Hall of Hogwarts and wondered which psychological desire that stemmed from.
It's similar, I think. It's a place for your mind to rest, so it doesn't end up scrambled while the world settles. It'd be a shame for you to end up mad at the end of this, Lily said to him with a grin.
Are you her? Harry asked, feeling stupid.
Of course I am. Albus met you last time, and he loves his riddles. I'm me, you're you. This is temporary, but real, she explained.
Will you be dead in my world?
He asked, his voice a whisper. Lily nodded and stepped forward to him, wrapping her arms around him.
Yes, I will, love. As I should be. My time came as it was supposed to, and I was doing precisely what I wanted to be doing. It was the same for your dad, she said in his ear.
Harry wrapped his arms around her and squeezed, perhaps too tight, but she didn't complain. Tears pricked his eyes, and he clenched them shut. He didn't know how long it was before he released her, but she held tight to his hand, not letting him go far.
Will it be the same as before? He asked.
No, not exactly. There were some wrongs that are being righted. I'm not sure how it all works exactly, but things didn't happen as they should have. Now they will have done, Lily explained. Some deaths weren't meant to happen, and did. Others were destined to happen, and didn't. Nothing will be perfect, but when is life ever? What matters, Harry, or what matters to me, is that you'll have every opportunity to be happy and live a long life.
She released his hand and looked around the room with curious eyes. A bright smile came upon her face, and she moved to the Gryffindor table and hoisted herself up to sit on it.
What you saw, what you encountered in that place with your dad, it was an uncharitable view of him. Who he ended up growing into differed from what you saw,
his mom said to him, her voice quiet.
He loves you, as I do, and he supports you in whomever you love.
Really? Harry asked, his voice breaking a bit.
Yes,
Lily met his gaze and nodded. Something startled her, and she looked around, then back at him, and hopped from the table.
I think it's just about time. One more hug?
As her arms folded around him, she squeezed tight.
I love you. I will always be with you. Understand?
I love you,
Harry whispered, and knew no more.
Luckily, the hit wasn't too hard, just enough to make him lose consciousness for a few minutes.
Madame Pomfrey, he could identify as he fought for that consciousness she spoke of.
Potter's lucky he's no longer a student, McGonagall said.
Sorry, Professor, she said.
Really? Sneaking onto Hogwarts grounds to show young Mr. Lupin the hippogriffs? You could have just sent an owl for permission, McGonagall scolded.
Harry pried his eyes open.
Is Teddy okay?
He's just fine, and back in his mother's care. You're lucky he had a spurt of accidental magic, or we may not be having this conversation.
McGonagall crossed her arms and shook her head, and Harry felt like a student.
Tonks?
Harry asked, confused.
found the entire situation hilarious, unfortunately. She wishes you a speedy healing. I believe she's just grateful she's not the only one whose feet come out from beneath them, McGonagall said, then huffed. When you get home, you will send an owl to schedule tea with me sometime next week. Yes? Good.
McGonagall turned without waiting for an answer and left the wing. Harry grinned and looked at the matron, who also huffed and walked away from him.
Thank you, Madame Pomfrey,
he called to her, and received no answer.
Tonks was alive.
So far, this world was turning out fine. The door swung open to reveal a foreboding-looking Severus Snape in a navy blue jumper and black and blue check pajama trousers. His feet were bare. Harry grinned as the heavy rain streaked down his face and glasses, his clothing already soaked.
Good to see you. May I come in?
Harry asked and moved to enter the cottage, but Severus stepped in his way.
What do you want? Snape asked.
He looked at Harry.
Are you entirely unaware of the impervious charm?
Harry's grin settled into a smile.
I'm aware. I just forgot. I had other things on my mind. May I come in?
Harry repeated.
Why?
Severus narrowed his eyes, but it no longer had the same effect.
Well, I'll tell you inside, Harry said.
How did you know I was here? Snape asked.
Minerva mentioned you spend 1 weekend home per month, Harry said.
Snape huffed.
Do not track water through my home,
Severus ordered, and let the door fall open as he backed a few more feet into the house. Harry stepped inside and pulled off his gray traveling cloak and took his wand from it. He cast a dozen drying spells, and in the end only felt damp. He hung the cloak on an empty hook and felt another spell strike him. It dried his damp clothing and left him feeling warm.
Thanks, Harry said.
Shoes off. I would rather not have mud in my house. Who knows the things our precious aura traipses through, Severus said.
He turned around and went through an archway into a side room. Harry huffed a laugh and pulled a box from his cloak before he kicked his trainers off and followed. The kitchen was small and seemed to be constructed with much of the same stone that lined the outside of the cottage. A small table with two chairs held a cup of tea and an open book. Severus had arranged himself to lean back against the worktop, with his arms crossed, though the pose was more foreboding back when he still wore teaching robes.
Harry felt giddy. He couldn't pull the smile from his face. Severus Snape had more walls than the most defensive fortress, and he couldn't wait to find a way through them.
I appreciate that you think me precious, Harry said. Severus frowned for a moment, but as he seemed to remember what he had said, Harry pushed on.
I got you something.
Harry held out the box, and after a moment of Severus not moving, he set the box on the table.
What is it? Snape asked.
The Old English Herbarium, Harry said, and watched for a reaction.
Severus snorted. I am to believe you have one of only 4 translations of the Pseudo-Apuleius Herbarius in that box, and you are just gifting it to me, out of the kindness of your heart. No ulterior motives.
Harry spotted the kettle and moved to refill it as he answered.
You can believe what you like. I will say I have one of only 5 translations of that old herb book in that box. I'm gifting it to you because I know you'd love it, and any ulterior motives I may or may not have nothing to do with your accepting the gift.
Old herb? Do you have any idea of how precious that manuscript is? Snape asked.
Harry heard the box open as he lit a flame under the kettle. By the time Severus's tirade was about the
educational value alone,
Harry had found the makings and had 2 mugs of tea prepared. He removed the cooling cup from the table, replaced it, and sat, cradling his own, in the other chair. He was pretty sure Severus only remembered he was there, in theory. In practice, he was lecturing, and his eyes never left the manuscript as he cast protection charms before turning each page. Harry settled into the chair and watched, enjoying both the tea and the show. When Severus drank his tea without thinking, Harry hid his growing smile behind his own mug. By the time the sky was dimming,
Harry had refreshed their tea twice. The second came with sandwiches. Severus had hummed in response to a question from him once, and Harry had meandered most of the house. "Well," Harry said loudly, and Severus's head snapped up, realizing he was still there. "This was a lovely visit, but it's getting a bit late. It was wonderful to see you, Severus. I shall see you soon, I'm sure. Thanks for the tea." Harry smiled, squeezed Severus's shoulder, and went to the entry to pull on his shoes and cloak. He left the house, closing the door behind him, and heard it reopen as he apparated home. Harry collapsed onto his sofa. Everything hurt. Robards had sent him on a fruitless mission to track down a stolen crop that never ended up being stolen. This wouldn't be his typical type of assignment, but it was Gawain's sister who contacted the Auror office, and Robards seemed to think it was great fun to put him on the case. He ended up apparating from the Shetland Islands to Plymouth and everywhere in between before finding out the crop had made its way to a neighbor's house. Harry kicked off his boots and used the last of the energy he had to pull his legs up onto the sofa. A loud knock came just before he drifted off, and he swore to God, Merlin, and Her Majesty before yelling for whoever it was to come in. If it was a Death Eater hell-bent on revenge, he supposed it was his time. He closed his eyes for a blessed moment while the door opened and closed. "What is wrong with you?" Harry smiled and opened his eyes. "Severus, have you ever been to Yell? It's beautiful," Harry said before a yawn caught him. "I'd get up and make tea, but I'm not sure I could." "This isn't a social call," Severus said. "Oh?" Harry asked. He pushed his glasses up and rubbed his face as he sat up and dragged his legs back off the sofa. "Are you in danger?" Harry forced himself up. His thighs burned with the effort. He was back down before he realized what had happened. Severus had shoved him. "Stay down, you idiot. You're clearly fatigued," Severus said to him. "Are you in danger?" Harry asked again. Severus rolled his eyes and looked around the room. He made a face and sat in Harry's worn brown armchair.
"Why would you assume I was?"
"You said it wasn't a social call. I assumed business. I'm an Auror."
"I am aware," Snape said.
Harry grinned and shook his head. "What can I do for you, Severus?"
"Why, after a half decade, did you show up on my doorstep?"
"I'm sorry it wasn't sooner," Harry said. Harry's hand flew up to cover another yawn.
"That's not,"
Snape huffed.
"Why at all did you? What are those ulterior motives you admitted to?"
"I missed you," Harry said. "That answers both questions." Severus huffed again, and his posture relaxed.
"Why?"
Harry sighed and smiled. "Why not? Do you want me to extol your virtues?" he asked. Harry expected the stare he received in reply. Severus wouldn't be happy until Harry revealed a nefarious purpose. "Hungry?"
"What?
Are you hungry? Molly probably left something delicious here. Or we can go out. Plenty of restaurants in the area. If you'd rather wizarding, there's the Leaky. But anywhere out of London, I'll need you to side along me. I'm knackered," Harry said, then struggled to his feet.
"Molly Weasley?" Severus asked.
Really, the man clung to the oddest parts of what Harry said. "The same. Ever since Ron made her stop filling his cold cupboard, mine ends up twice as full," Harry said to him, and took ginger steps toward his bedroom to change. "I don't mind cooking, but I rarely have time for it. Just a moment." He closed the bedroom door behind him and stripped from his work robes, leaving them in a pile on the floor. Worn jeans and an even more worn tee replaced his heavy Auror robes, which made him feel better and more energetic. His muscles still ached, but he wasn't about to let this opportunity slide. Harry had learned that Severus needed to be kept off kilter. He towed off his socks and grabbed a fresh pair before leaving the room. Severus was snooping through a case file he'd left out early in the week. He shut the file jacket as Harry half sat on the arm of the sofa to pull his socks on.
5 years, Potter. 5. I've not seen you but for the front page of the odd periodical. You decide, out of the blue, after 5 years, that you miss me? Severus asked.
Let's discuss while we eat.
Leaky? Harry asked as he pulled his boots on.
No. Now, Severus demanded.
Severus, Harry sighed.
That, Snape pointed at him. We are not friends, colleagues, or neighbors. You are a former student, and not a particularly gifted one at that. There is no reason for your actions, Snape said.
Will you believe me? Harry asked, even if it's not what you expect to hear. Severus was still for a bit, looking around the room. When he looked back at Harry, he gave a small nod.
Yes.
Harry settled on the arm of the chair. He pulled himself back, and his feet dangled, laces dragging on the floor.
From what I know, you're a good man. Brave, loyal, intelligent, and darkly funny. Your kindness is subtle, as is your strength.
That's what I know now.
I want to know more, Harry said.
Snape's eyes narrowed.
You overestimate my virtues, he said.
Our opinions differ. You underestimate them.
Dinner? Harry responded.
No, Severus said. He turned, crossed the brief space to the door, and left. Harry groaned, kicked his boots back off, and slid backward into the seat of the armchair. This time, Harry slipped in as soon as the door was open. He towed off his trainers and handed over the takeaway bag so he could hang his cloak.
What are you doing here? Snape asked.
Being barefoot and holding the takeaway took away from the snarl in his voice.
You said no to dinner, so I brought lunch, Harry said with a smile.
He grabbed one bag and left the other with Severus and led the way to the kitchen. Harry put the bag on the table and went searching through the cupboards for plates. He heard Severus put the bag down as he found them and grabbed cutlery from the drawer he'd discovered his last time here.
I did not say you could stay, Severus said.
Harry turned around and nodded. He brought the dinnerware to the table, put it down, and set to unpacking the bags.
You haven't said I couldn't.
Well, yet, I suppose.
Wasn't sure exactly what you liked, so I got a variety. I'm not picky.
Once Harry unpacked everything and opened all the containers, he folded the bags and stowed them on the worktop.
Beer, wine, or butterbeer? He asked, gathering a beer for himself.
Severus's arm reached in front of him and left, holding Harry's drink. He smiled and grabbed another. Harry settled himself into the same chair as before. Severus sat across the table and opened the bottle, setting the cap onto the saucer for his tea, and took a long drink before looking at Harry.
Is there no way to be rid of you? Severus asked. He sounded defeated.
I won't force my presence on you. I know you won't lie to me, so just tell me you don't want me around, Harry said to him.
I do not want you around, Snape responded.
Harry's hands clenched, and he tightened his jaw. He took a moment to steady himself before he stood. He couldn't look up, no matter how hard he tried.
Okay. Sorry to, sorry, he said, and left the kitchen.
Once out of sight, he rushed and pulled his trainers and cloak on in record speed. He was outside in moments, and had apparated the moment the door closed behind him. He closed his eyes and breathed deep, trying to contain his disappointment and unclench his stomach. Just because it had happened before didn't mean it was meant to be.
Harry?
Tonks's voice startled him, and his eyes opened. She looked horrible, like she'd been crying.
Teddy?
Harry asked, looking around for the boy.
He's sleeping in your bed. I hope that's okay. It's the only place he would agree to,
Tonks said, and bit the corner of her lip. She readjusted the sleeves of her shirt, pulling them around her hands, then crossed her arms.
What happened? Are you okay? Harry asked. Not me. It's, Mum's heart. She...
Harry pulled her into a hug,
Over her shoulder, he could see through his cracked bedroom floor a small lump under his duvet. His problems seemed small. Out of Place, written by Faye Lee, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 11. Tonks took leave from the department, and when Robards got wind of the circumstances, he offered Harry the same. Tonks and Teddy were staying with him for a while, and Harry did his best to help. Harry started planning for the Black House to be repaired. George and Bill offered to finish clearing it of artifacts and curses, and George did a fair bit of repairs along the way. They all had their own lives, but in times of need, the Weasleys never failed to take care of their own, to which Harry was ever grateful to be included. The service was long and lovely. Teddy clung to him and buried his face in Harry's neck whenever someone came near. Tonks scowled at all the well-wishers that refused to even acknowledge Andromeda in public when she was alive. When Minerva McGonagall approached with Pomona Sprout at her side, it was the first time Harry saw color come to Tonks's cheeks all day. Sprout pulled Tonks aside to speak, and McGonagall put a hand on his shoulder for a moment.
"The castle's empty for the summer. Send an owl. A few days up there will do the three of you a world of good," she said.
Harry thanked her and watched as she wove her way to the back of the crowded hall. Teddy sniffled in his ear, and he rubbed the boy's back just as he spotted McGonagall approach Severus, who met his gaze long enough to give a brief nod. The entire order was here, but Harry hadn't expected him.
"Can we go home?"
Teddy asked, speaking for the first time since they arrived.
"Yeah, love. Let's get your mom and go home," Harry said, and squeezed him tighter.
Harry made his way through the crowd to Tonks, who was just saying her goodbyes to Sprout and a wizard he didn't know.
"Home?" she asked.
Harry nodded, just as they turned to head toward the apparition point. Percy and Ron showed up to clear the way. Hogwarts and her grounds were glorious, no matter the time of year. Summer was the only time Harry hadn't experienced before, and it was beautiful. The early morning sun highlighted the grounds that were covered in wildflowers as the grass had grown longer. Teddy ran through the grass instead of staying on the path. Every so often he would trip and fall to his knees, then pull himself back up to run again. Tonks watched him with a small smile gracing her lips, and Harry had to steady her twice from tripping over her own feet. Teddy may look like Remus, but he was Tonks's son, through and through. Professor McGonagall waited on the castle steps. Her emerald robes were brighter than the ones Harry had seen her wear before. They greeted her, and the adults stood there for a few minutes, entranced by the laughing child. When Teddy took a harder tumble than usual, Tonks gathered him up, and McGonagall called a house elf to take their bags. McGonagall led them to two adjacent rooms.
"These used to be teachers' quarters, when the teaching staff was larger," McGonagall said. "I've freshened them up. You can take meals in the Great Hall at the usual times. If you need anything, I shall be in my office most days. I go home after dinner, but Hogsmeade is a brief walk."
"Thank you," Harry said.
"Could I show Teddy the Hufflepuff common room?" Tonks asked.
McGonagall smiled.
"I'll walk with you."
Harry watched them walk down the corridor until they turned the corner, then went into his room. It was nearly identical to the one he'd woken up in a couple of months ago, though the mantle was free of photos. Harry flopped down on the bed and was asleep in minutes. He opened his eyes to see a house elf place a piece of folded parchment on the table.
"Thanks," he said, then cleared his throat.
The house elf jumped and disappeared. Harry rubbed his face as he sat up, then felt around for his glasses that he hadn't removed before he fell asleep. Once they were on, he grabbed the parchment and read it. Tonks and Teddy were joining McGonagall in Hogsmeade for lunch. He stood and straightened his robes, then left the room for the kitchen, which was a short walk away. Harry smiled at the pair's giggle, slipped through the portrait, and a cacophony struck him. House elves swarmed him and led him to the table. Some claimed to remember his favorite foods
and rushed off to make them. Harry hadn't yet said hello. Harry watched as Creature elbowed the other elves that tried to serve him. He would take the dishes and present them himself. When Harry tried to intervene, Creature scowled and disappeared. The antics of the house elves used to make him laugh, but now the sound and movement were overwhelming. Harry was knackered. Being a full-time godfather differed from what he'd known before. 2 weekends a month and a month in the summer had become a daily job. Tonks was doing well enough, but her heart was broken. She'd not so much as changed her hair since it happened. Molly Weasley and Narcissa Malfoy had both reached out. Perhaps it was time to let them in. Hermione and Ron thought he'd pulled away because of Andromeda. Not talking about his experience was starting to bother him more and more. He felt like he was keeping secrets from everyone he loved. His mood fell, and he decided he would open up. He thanked the elves and left the kitchens. Harry slipped out of the portrait just as someone entered. He slammed into them, then overcompensated trying to right himself and jammed his shoulder against the wall. "Sorry," he said. Harry pulled away enough to realize Severus was staring at him, paused in rubbing his own chin. He froze for long seconds before words came to him. "McGonagall said the castle was empty," Harry said.
"Staff come and go as they please through the summer months," Severus said.
"Oh," Harry said.
"Sorry, I'll get out of your hair. Sorry."
Harry turned and hastened away.
"Potter,"
Snape called when Harry had reached the end of the corridor. He hung his head, took a bracing breath, and turned around.
"Yeah?"
Harry asked. He looked up and rubbed his sore shoulder. Severus looked uncertain and said nothing for too long. Harry was about to break the silence when Severus asked,
"May I speak with you after dinner?"
"Yeah, okay," Harry said. Severus nodded. He entered the kitchen, and the portrait fell closed behind him. When Tonks returned with McGonagall and Teddy, she was laughing. Teddy waved to him as he watched them enter the castle together. Harry waved back. They had spent the afternoon in the village, and Harry had flown for a few hours on the pitch. He'd almost tumbled as his thoughts left him, preoccupied with whatever Snape wanted to tell him. Harry picked at his dinner, still full from lunch. 2 house elves had taken a particular interest in Teddy. They were coaxing him to eat as Teddy got distracted by Hagrid's waves from the other end of the teacher's table. Professor Sprout had arrived for dinner. It had delighted her when Tonks had agreed to let her teach Teddy in the greenhouses in the morning. Harry said his goodnights and wandered from the hall, then through the castle doors. He sat on the steps and leaned back against the cool stone. He realized it was where he'd left Sirius. The location had a lovely view of the Forbidden Forest, and if he leaned forward, Harry could see the edge of the pitch. He was tempted to fly for a bit, but he'd showered before dinner and didn't know when Snape wanted whatever he wanted. Today had been the first day in ages that Harry hadn't had to take care of Tonks and Teddy, and he felt guilty at how relaxed he felt. Hermione had replied to the letter he had sent after lunch, and she and Ron would meet him here for lunch tomorrow. Harry knew they both had work, which spoke to the desperation they must feel to speak to him. The castle door creaked open, and Harry looked up and watched Snape step out. The sunlight was dim, as it had sunk beyond the trees. Severus looked across the grounds before he descended the steps and sat near Harry. Snape adjusted his robe and planted his hands on his knees. Harry bit at the inside of his lip to avoid speaking first.
"I am sorry about Andromeda," Severus said.
He didn't look at Harry, but straight ahead.
"Me too. It's been difficult. Her healers thought she would be all right after the last time," Harry said.
"What you have done for Nymphadora and her son has been admirable," Snape said.
He sat stock still, which belied his awkwardness with this conversation. With family, Harry said. Being a child's godparent. Not because of that, Harry interrupted. Tonks and Andromeda were friends, turned into family, as Ron and Hermione are. Even if I weren't anything special to Teddy, he'd still be family.
Oh, Snape said in a quiet voice.
Is that all you wanted to talk about?
No, Severus said.
Oh.
I dislike manipulation and being misled, Snape said after some time had passed.
Do you feel like I did that? Harry asked with care.
Our final parting was 5 years before, on a neutral tone. All that time passes, and you appear on my doorstep with a priceless artifact, Severus said. Your excuse, your explanation, was that you missed me. You would elaborate no further. What could I think?
That I missed you? Harry suggested.
Consider it from my perspective, Severus said.
Harry looked off at the darkened forest. The entrance torches had flared to life, casting a circle of light and shadow around them.
I assumed you knew me better than that, Harry said after a time.
I do not know you at all.
You used to think you did, Harry said.
The child I thought I knew would not have sacrificed his life. He would not have risen quickly through the ranks in any profession. He would not take in a woman and her son and dedicate himself to their recovery,
Snape said.
I do not know you at all.
Harry thought about those words, ran them through his head again and again. I think I have an unfair advantage in that case, he told Snape when he made sense of it all.
Creature!
Harry had just finished speaking, and Creature was already there, giving a low bow.
That's fine, Creature. There's a blue book.
The one Master Harry hides in the bottom drawer? Yes,
Creature said. Yes. Would you mind fetching it? Harry asked. Creature bowed again, his nose touching the ground.
Nothing would make Creature happier.
He disappeared. It wasn't long until he returned, foisted the book into Harry's hands, and disappeared again without a word. Harry laughed. He wants to hate me, but refuses to let any other elf near me. He sobered and clasped both hands around the book. Snape had turned and was looking at it.
Everything here is entirely true. I can show you the memories as well, if you'd like. But this is a summary of my life, since the war, up until now. Major points only. You'll understand as you get through it, Harry said.
He held the book out with one hand. I haven't told anyone yet. I plan on talking to Hermione and Ron about it tomorrow.
You wish for me to read this? Severus asked.
He took the book from Harry and traced a finger along the cover.
It's all handwritten. Good luck, Harry said.
I remember your quill craft. I shall need it.
When Harry returned to his room, he peeked in on Tonks and Teddy, finding them both asleep. He sent for a house elf. Creature hadn't answered. For files and labels, and set to filling them with memories. Very careful in his choices, he sent them along to Snape's quarters, and settled in to sleep. Harry woke late the next morning, when the sun was already high in the sky. He checked his watch and sprung from the bed to pull on fresh clothing. The book and memories were on the desk. With a pit in his stomach, he snatched the book and ran out. Harry was halfway through the corridors when he could free the edge of his jeans that had got caught between his foot and his trainer. He took the path to Hogsmeade at a run and hoped his friends were running late. When he slid into his seat in front of him at the back of the pub, he was out of breath.
"Sorry, just woke up," Harry said.
"It's perfectly fine. You have had little sleep lately with Teddy around, I'd wager," Hermione said.
"Too right," Harry agreed.
"Been reading?"
Hermione asked, her eyes roving over the book.
"Writing, actually. More like making notes," Harry said. "Don't get enough of that at work, mate?" Ron asked.
Rosmerta arrived with their lunch and drinks.
They thanked her, and she flew away to help other patrons.
"We ordered for you. You were late," Ron said.
"Thanks," Harry said, and picked through his meat pie.
"All right?" Ron asked. He frowned and looked Harry over.
"Yes, how are you handling everything? How are Tonks and Teddy?"
"I'm tired. They're healing. Teddy understands less, so he gets sad every couple of days. Tonks? Well, I think McGonagall and Sprout are working magic. She laughed yesterday," Harry said.
"And you?" Hermione asked.
"I don't know where to begin," Harry said. "The beginning would be a good start," Ron said, and pushed his empty dish aside. "Have you ever read The Wizard of Oz?" Harry asked. "No, what's that?" Ron asked.
"It's the tale of a muggle girl whose house gets transported by a tornado to a magical land," Hermione said to him.
Ron nodded, and they turned their attention to Harry. Harry bit at his lip and slid the book across the dark wood tabletop.
"I was the girl. An ancient scythe was the tornado. I may have touched and bled on it in the Department of Mysteries," Harry said.
"You touched a magical artifact without knowing what it does?" Ron said.
He rubbed his head, and Harry remembered the last time they were all in the Department of Mysteries together.
"You're lucky you're alive!"
Harry laughed through his nerves.
"You've no idea."
Hermione pulled the book in and opened it. She scanned the first few pages, then frowned.
"Do you think McGonagall would mind if we kept you company for a few hours?"
Ron asked, looking from Hermione to Harry.
"It should be fine."
Harry spent the afternoon answering Ron and Hermione's questions. Some questions were unanswerable, and some answers were heartbreaking. By the time they left his notes safe in Hermione's satchel, Harry felt free. He hadn't tried to guess at their reactions, but, as always, they supported him and were willing to help. The last day of their visit was quiet. Harry and Tonks brought Teddy to see Hagrid, who showed them many delightful creatures. They had lunch by the lake, then Professor McGonagall saw them off to the train station. As the train pulled away, Harry thought about how much he missed Hogwarts already. The morning Teddy went back to daycare, they moved into the Black family home. Tonks seemed better, and the move went well. A few friends showed up to help. Robard sent an offer along from his sister, but Harry politely rejected it. Ginny and Lee helped Tonks arrange and unpack, as Harry and Neville made the trips from his flat and Andromeda's house to number 12. Their first days back at work were strange as they ironed their routines out, but overall, Harry was ready to be back. From that point on, it was easy to get back into the routine. His work was almost identical, but for Tonks's presence. It was much the same as before the scythe. A few more lives and a few different deaths. Harry researched what he could about souls and lives as the thought of siblings weighed on his mind. Falling into his life was just what he needed, and though he'd never wish for it, Andromeda's death helped him through the heartache he felt. A rampant 5-year-old was the greatest distraction. By the end of August, life was almost normal. He finished reading to Teddy, who fell asleep halfway into their latest chapter of The Hobbit. Harry stopped by his bedroom to change into pajamas, and then continued down to the kitchen. He hadn't had time to eat earlier. Teddy had decided he hated dinner, and so he'd decorated the floor with it. Harry ran one hand through his hair and pushed the door open. Tonks was at the table drinking tea with Severus Snape. They turned at the sound of the door opening. Harry, contrary to what his schoolhouse would imply, turned and left. He wasn't hungry.
"All right, Harry?" "Why wouldn't I be?" Harry said to Tonks.
She circled the sofa they'd added to the library and swatted his feet away so she could sit.
"He left?" Harry asked.
"No, he's waiting in the kitchen. Very awkward, that one. Before you show up, he's as pleasant as pie. You run out of the room, and the man can't get two words together," Tonks said. "You didn't tell me you had a thing with Snape."
"I don't," Harry said.
"Sure, right.
Why do you think he's in our kitchen, then? Not the tea. That's from Tesco. Nostalgia, maybe? The good old days of war, when he spent half his time...
Why, then? Harry asked.
To talk to your specky arse. We'll talk about this in the morning. I'll send him up. At least sit and look a touch interested, Tonks said.
Tonks stood and rubbed his shoulder as she passed by, back out of the library. Harry shuffled into a seated position and ran his hands through his hair, before he pulled the quilt around him like a cloak. Harry turned his head when he heard a noise, and watched Severus enter the library. Each of his steps were careful, as if the room may be trapped. When Snape looked at him, Harry tilted his head toward the empty seat next to him. Severus sat down and rested his back against the overstuffed cushion. He rested an ankle on his knee and sighed. Harry realized Snape wasn't wearing robes, but trousers and a button-down. The silence dragged on until it became unbearable for Harry.
"Tonks said you wanted to talk," Harry said.
"Yes."
"Well?"
"I was angry," Snape said.
"Plenty of things for you to be angry about," Harry said. "Are you still angry?"
"I was angry that you saw me in ways that I would never show anyone," Snape said.
"It was you. Not you, but it was still you. You showed it to me," Harry said, and pulled the quilt around himself.
"I suppose that is true. In some way."
"True to me. Are you still angry?" Harry asked again.
"No."
Harry sighed and looked at Snape.
"What do you want?"
he asked.
"I want you around," Severus said.
He met Harry's gaze and frowned.
"Am I too late?"
"No," Harry said urgently. "No." Harry watched the tension fall from Severus's shoulders. Severus readied himself and stood.
"The timing is poor. Minerva has a series of staff meetings set for tomorrow," he said.
Disappointed, Harry disentangled himself from the quilt and stood.
"All right," he said.
Severus reached out and grasped his hand, and after a moment's hesitation used it to pull Harry closer. He wrapped his arms around Severus when he was close enough, and felt Severus do the same. Harry hadn't known how much he'd missed this.
"Last meeting is over at 6, Severus said in his ear, leaning the side of his head against Harry's. "Have dinner with me in Hogsmeade."
Harry grinned and turned his head and captured Severus's lips and felt Severus give in to the kiss. It didn't last long, only for a few seconds, but to Harry, it meant everything. He rested his forehead against Severus's as he felt Snape's hands move to his hips. Harry wished they'd move closer to his bum.
"Hogsmeade, 6 o'clock? Harry asked. "Perfect," Snape said.
"Perfect."